Okay, let's start the show.
It's May 10th, 2012. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. Man's here. I'm Will Smith. I'm gonna go shut up my dog. I'll be right back. We'll just start the intro.
Chloe Bananas.
Does she need to go outside?
Come here. Come on. Get over here and lay down and be quiet. And you're civilized.
I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, as always, Norman Chan. It's a fine Diesel Sweeties t-shirt you're wearing, which we're not going to talk about.
Okay.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's much quieter in here.
We're a little off now. All the dog barking. There's children outside. The thing about having a dog in the house, and you probably... Well, actually, Huey's pretty chill, Gary, so you may not know this.
When people are at the door, though.
Yeah, she thinks that like she lives in a world that there's... Once you close that door, there's nothing outside. And when she hears evidence to the contrary, then she gets very protective and growly. So yeah, Chloe Bananas is here too. How are you doing today, Gary?
I'm fine, thank you. I have a bit of a headache.
I'm sorry.
So if I'm a little bit, I don't know why, just do. But if I'm a bit subdued until the Tylenol kicks in, then that's the reason why.
The thing everybody really wants to know is, have you eaten lunch yet?
I have eaten lunch.
Okay.
So
evil Gary may not.
You're not necessarily
going to
get the dark side version today, no.
Probably best. Too much dark side is bad for the soul. So let's. Well, first off, Maker Faire's next weekend. It's a week from Friday, Saturday. Seems like just around the corner.
Maker Faire Bay Area.
Yeah, the San Mateo Maker Faire. We'll be there both days in the morning. We're going to be. Let's see, Adam's speaking at 11 o'clock on Sunday. So we'll be there for that, and then we'll be bopping around trying stuff out on Saturday all day, or until at least one or two. Gary, you going to come down? Do you come down? Have you been to Maker Faire before?
No.
You should check it out. It's pretty entertaining.
It involves leaving the house.
Involves driving to San Mateo.
Yeah, you got to deal with the parking Nazis.
Although San Mateo, I could fold in a trip to the Lego store, which is needed because I need to pick up that R2-D2.
It's not too long a trip from the Lego store. Like, you can walk from the mall to the Maker Faire.
All right.
Is that the last one you're getting? The R2-D2?
No, I'm going to get the Sopwith Camel. I'm going to get the Big Ben. And if the fabled collector's B-Wing comes out, I'll be getting that.
But that will be it for the year.
Yeah, I'm not interested in any of the Lord of the Rings sets or these Monster Fighters sets. And it seems like the majority of the other Star Wars sets are prequel Clone Wars garbage. I have no interest
in that.
Have
you seen
stuff.
I know you're probably not interesting to you. Is that a full real set? It's a book that's came out. Lego Heavy Weapons.
Oh, this was fantastic. I saw
this. They had it at Bricks by the Bay.
The book was there?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize. It was on Amazon now.
It was at the books.
He didn't have copies of the book, though.
I tried to get you to go look at, but you wouldn't go.
No.
There was a bunch of books on how to build functioning Lego weapons.
Yeah, so this kid, I think his name is Alex Street, he's 17 years old, and he has a YouTube channel. All he does is build these custom MOCs, my own creations, using Lego, and he builds functioning one-to-one scale replicas of famous weapons, firearms.
When you say functioning, what do they actually shoot?
So the book he sells...
Bricks, studs?
They shoot Lego bricks using rubber bands.
Okay. You could do some damage with that.
Yeah, but the barrel is only like, you know, for the longest gun, it's going to be like 10 inches long or something.
Well,
so
having
rubber
the
band
the
is
length
good.
Of the barrel is the...
Well, that's how much...
I guess it's how much force you can get on the rubber band.
On the rubber band, so you're not going to really get that much projectile out of that.
It's a crazy
But it's cool. It's like... The book teaches you how to make 4 Lego guns, from a Desert Eagle to a pump action shotgun.
Just
and,
4?
Yeah, 4 in a book, yeah.
Okay.
Because it's
But
the
these
full
are like 1,000 piece.
Well, the
builds,
Desert Eagle is like 400 pieces, like 382. And then obviously the bigger ones are, or more pieces. I think no more than 1,000 pieces. But if you watch the video that they put out to promote the book, it's amazing. Like, there's a fold out stock. You have the slide actually works, it has the blowback when you pull the trigger, and it's just a lot you can do with Technics.
Cool. Do you are you feeling like the Lego is passing? Are you or is it winding down or just nothing exciting for you?
We're just in a little bit of a lull right now because we don't have a lot of room in the house right now. A lot of the sets that are still in boxes waiting to be built, we just don't have, you know, until we reorganize the house a bit more, there's nowhere to put them. Well, we'll get to them all. And like I said, but we're not, you know, I went through a period where I was just like buying everything I could see.
Yeah, we were there.
Crazy shopping spree. And I've still got a lot of that stuff unbuilt. So I've built and amassed enough of a backlog. And I've, you know, got all the sets that I want for right now. So like I said, I'm just going to get the R2 and a couple of other sets.
That's really a problem with people who collect stuff and have limited space.
Bay Area collectors.
Well, yeah, like you know, whether you collect Lego or posters. I was talking to my housemate about this. Like, okay, I buy a lot of posters. I frame them all, but there's only so much wall space. Or if you buy like figurines, there's only so much shelf space. What do you do?
My mentality
is no, you rotate it in and out and you curate. Mm. And that makes every time someone comes to your place, you know, if you rotate the stuff you have on display every month or so, then every time someone comes, there's
you could also do like the intense super grid of posters. Have a wall that's just
make it a museum. Make it a curated experience.
So this week's going to be Ollie Moss and next is going to be
Tyler Stout. And then after that, Ken Taylor.
I can see that. I wonder if the Star Wars stuff, especially if they kind of had a lull between the time when they weren't sure if they were going to renew the contract, the Star Wars license, and now they're ramping back up again now.
Maybe.
That that's been signed again. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm stoked about the R2, but I'm kind of not excited about any of the other Star Wars stuff this year. And
not even the B-Wing?
Well, I mean, if the B-Wing's real, then yes, I will be excited about that. But I mean, that would complete my my fighter collection.
But yeah,
I need an A-wing. I guess.
I mean, of all the Star Wars sets that are coming out, there's two Jabba-related sets. The Palace is a play set, which I generally like less than the models. There's a Sarlacc pit play set as well, which looks kind of cool, but I don't know. And then all the others are prequel stuff. I just have no interest. So yeah.
Well, we'll see. Let's jump into news. So like I said, we'll be at Maker Faire. Norm and I will be there, and Joey will be there all day Saturday morning early and Sunday morning early until around noonish both days.
Yeah, we bumped to readers there.
We see a ton of readers. I think we're probably there more than any place else except for maybe PAX. Mm-hmm. We see a bunch of folks. So, even though we'll see
a bunch of the same stuff every year, I think this year will be a little different just because the direction of the site will be doing more interviews and
we just talked to people who are building cool stuff, which we kind of didn't do so much last year and the year before. We'll be there for that. That video will be up shortly after that. We got a couple of other exciting things coming up on the site in the next few weeks that I don't think we should talk about yet. But the Reed Reactor video went up yesterday. People seemed to really like that. They got to see us standing on a nuclear reactor and talking to a bunch of undergraduates who were really into nuclear dating and stuff like that. We learned about gamma spectroscopy. And
every time you say nuclear
stuff. Nuclear?
The back of your head says, is it nuclear or nuclear?
It's nuclear. Yeah.
It's nuclear.
It's nuclear. You said nuclear like three times
in
that video.
If you watched the video, I never say it once.
Really?
Because the take that we use, I intentionally did not say it.
Oh. Yeah, the whole time we were doing those outros and all everybody said, I was like, Norm, you're saying it wrong.
Nope,
Norm,
not going to say it.
Norm, you're saying it wrong.
Don't risk saying it wrong.
Norm, you're saying it wrong. 32-nanometer iPad.
When Apple released the new iPad back in March,
the third gen iPad.
Oh, they called it the new iPad. They kept the iPad 2 for sale. You can go to stores right now and buy a new iPad, or for $399 as opposed to $500, you can buy a 16 gigabyte Wi-Fi iPad 2,
which isn't a bad deal.
That's the entry model. And from all reports, from their earnings report, the Q1 earnings report, that model is selling very well. Turns out people actually like a more affordable iPad. Tim Cook called price sensitive customers. How about people without fat wallets? Because iPads are expensive.
Well, I mean, but $300?
$400.
$400.
$400 for 16 gig Wi-Fi.
$400 is takes you out of like notebook territory and into things that are not notebooks, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's not a bad deal. There's nothing wrong with the second generation.
I don't think it's a bad deal. If you are in the camp that believes Apple will release a 7-inch iPad, then I think it's something you should wait for. Because I imagine that would start off at an entry-level price. So the 16-gigabyte Wi-Fi iPad 2s aren't just the same ones that they made last year. Most of them are, but they're also using this as a way to introduce the new A5 chips revision.
So this is a smaller process size, which is what we've seen on PC CPUs and video cards for years.
Yep.
Were they 40 nanometers before? Is that what they were using?
45 nanometers before.
Okay.
And now they're 32 nanometers. Not every single iPad 2 has it. And on the box, you cannot tell.
Oh, you can't even look at the serial number?
Can't look at the serial number. Mm. All you can do is buy the iPad, open it up, run benchmarking software on there, or look to see whether iOS 5.1 is pre-installed. And I guess 5.11 now is pre-installed. And if you but if you have the new...
The new
iPad 2, you will get much more battery life. You'll get about 3 hours more battery life.
Wow, that's than the iPad 2. So a smaller process lets you use less power to less energy to generate the same
they
kind
are
of computing
cooler
power.
In Anantex testing, they had to buy a couple iPads to find one that had the new A5 chip. That new iPad ran cooler when playing a video and also. With web browsing and video playback and games, saw a significant jump in battery life.
Interesting.
Bad news for early adopters again.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, if you've had your iPad for a year and a half at this point, then you probably don't care.
I think it's just a nice bonus.
I hate that, though, when they do those stealth revisions. Like, I remember when the Xbox 360, I think it was the Jasper, it was like the first big nanometer reduction. But there was a way to look. It went around the internet. There was a way to look at the serial number and the UPC code and figure out what was what.
You know, as much as I don't
You went by manufacture date, which you could see on the box.
Yeah.
But I guess Apple's not making it that easy.
Or you could tell if you had – I mean, when you were looking for Falcon, the HDMI port ones obviously were the ones to go for.
I mean, as much as I hate going to forums and, you know, getting into – super nitpicky spec stuff. For a lot of products, especially monitors, you really need to look at, you know, where the product is made and what revision. Because even though it's the same model number, for example, like a Dell 2407 or something, you look at the revision when it was manufactured, and they change a lot of technologies.
That would drive me crazy, though. If I was in the market today for an iPad 3, I'd obviously want this newer.
It's only the iPad 2.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
When you said the new iPad, I assumed
the new iPad 2. Yeah.
Oh, well, then
it's for people
It's garbage, right, Gary?
Who are buying last year's model.
Nodding your head. Okay. Small hit here. You know the unskippable piracy warning at the start of DVDs and Blu-rays?
Says,
hey, the FBI counterfeiting copyright violation is a penalty, is a crime punishable
by anyone here recite?
Up to 5 years in prison or $250,000 in criminal fines. Blah, 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 blah.
That one doesn't annoy me as much as the red screen that you get, which then is in French as well. You have to sit through it twice.
I think it's Spanish at the bottom too, right?
It depends on your region, right?
Right. Well, French, Spanish, and English are all spoken in region one.
Do you hate that more than the commercials that you get in front of the Blu-rays?
You know what? I hate the entire experience. Moment I put in the disc until the moment the movie starts playing, I'm annoyed. And I know that that's a small, tiny, petty thing to be annoyed by. But the fact that sometimes, like, you put a Disney disc in, God help you, it'll take 5 minutes to get to the movie.
It's a big
in the vault.
It's a big argument in favor of streaming movies rather than using discs.
Well, streaming movies now also, I mean, while it's buffering, they use that as an opportunity, or potentially as an opportunity to display ads.
Do they?
I've never seen that.
Or maybe that's just future me talking.
I mean, like on Hulu and stuff, but like not if you actually rent a movie from iTunes or whatever. I've never seen an ad.
Seems like a missed opportunity.
Don't give them ideas.
Yeah, we did a story about this. I guess it was last year, maybe the year before even. It seems like it was a long time ago. But sat down and I went on an Apple TV and found a movie, put a disc in at the same time I basically fired up the Apple TV. And it took something like 3.5 minutes to get the movie playing, even skipping through all the ads on the Blu-ray disc. And I was able to search the store and download the movie and start playing in like 40 seconds or something like that. So there's another new piracy warning, and this one is by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency that basically says – well, hold on. I have the exact verbiage here. It says, piracy is not a victimless crime. For more information on how digital theft harms the economy, please visit this URL. So that's another 10 seconds. It's unskippable. It runs immediately following the FBI warning, but I assume before the red screen, the Interpol warning. And then before the warning that says the views expressed in the commentaries on this disc are not indicative of the studio who published the movie. And I guess after all the BD Live and the downloadable trailers and all that.
Wait, so
garbage.
Is this a new screen or is this just replacing that old?
It is a new screen.
But we used to see the FBI screen all the time, right?
The FBI screen has gotten a redesign as well. So apparently the FBI doesn't care enough about copyright. So it's going to be the FBI badge and then this ICE badge.
Okay. It's interesting this should come out this week because a lot of people have been using the mega opening weekend of the Avengers to argue that, in fact, this doesn't, that piracy is not the big deal in terms of the economic impact that people often say.
But the mega opening weekend of the Avengers is partly propped up by the increased revenue that increased money that they're charging for tickets. I read something this morning that said,
yeah, it doesn't matter. Even if they charge $18 on average for ticket. I mean, it was, I think, a 40-60 split between 3D and non-3D for the Avengers. And even if you count inflation in, just by sheer quantity of people in theaters, it was
Agreed.
I'm not saying that it's an argument that piracy isn't damaging the industry.
I'm not trying to take away from the Avengers. I think that it had a very successful opening weekend. And
Don't you dare.
I love the Avengers too. I had a good time. It was a lovely movie. It was a fun-filled family spectacular. But ticket prices have gone up 37% since 2002. So 10 years. Even when you're just talking about 2D screens, when you're not talking about the impact of 3D.
Are you more pissed off at the 10-second ad before a Blu-ray or DVD, or the 30-minute sold ad spot before a movie?
In a theater. I usually come to the theater about 10 minutes after the showtime starts.
Yeah,
to
we
avoid.
Know.
Yeah, hey, I am so sorry. Trying to traverse San Francisco on Saturday afternoon, I had no idea. It never takes that long to get through the park. People were lunatics that day. Also, the parking lot was full when we got to Japantown. So, yeah, that was fun too. Yeah, it was the 30 minutes before the movie annoy me, but not as much as like paying $35 or $30 or whatever for a Blu-ray disc. And
I think there's definitely a little bit. There's a little bit of a sense of entitlement there. I mean, back 25 years ago, when we bought VHS discs,
tapes,
there were 15-minute blocks that you had to fast forward in front
of. No, there was never a 15-minute block.
Did you ever have that Star Wars set with the Leonard Maltin, George Lucas interview?
Well, but that was content.
Content. Right. Bonus feature content.
I don't know. I just think
for the feature presentation.
Here's the thing: piracy is much more like digital download piracy from the internet. A digital download, I know, is redundant, but the piracy problem is much more prolific now than it was in 20 years ago when we were talking about VHS tapes. You're talking about near perfect copies, right? High quality copies, and if the experience that they're giving us on the discs that we're paying a pretty high premium for. You know, if you look at the price of a download from iTunes, which is usually $15 or $20, versus the disc, you're still paying $4 or $5 more for the disc usually if it's release day. That experience should be the best, and they definitely nailed the best as the best experience on video quality, audio quality, all that kind of stuff. It's just everything surrounding the actual movie sucks more.
I think some international hardware Blu-ray maker should make a region-free Blu-ray player that automatically skips all that and just jumps to track and even skips the menu.
Well, there are challenges with that because they'd have to constantly be updating the firmware. If you look at like what any DVD and the DVD and the Blu-ray decrypting people have to do in order to keep current on Blu-ray decryption, it changes literally every week. So I don't think that that's possible. I know that those were my favorite DVD players back in the DVD generation, right? Where you could just bust out the
region free
and skip past all that stuff and go straight to the movie every time. But that's why I rip. I mean, that's one of the reasons I rip Blu-rays. It's a pain in the ass, but I get the Apple TV experience and the Blu-ray picture quality. So yeah. So let's see. Next on the list, no DVD playback in Windows 8.
So Windows 8, the consumer preview, which people are using now, has Windows Media Center, and Windows Media Center, that's the front end that comes for HDPCs, and I guess you could still use it on desktop.
And you can use it with cable cards and stuff, too.
Yes, that will not be included with Windows 8. And also, while Windows 8 will
With any versions of Windows 8?
You have to buy it. I think it's in the
Store or something?
You gotta buy it in the Windows Store.
So what's it going to be? Like $10 or $15? Have they said?
They haven't said.
Oh.
Windows 8 will come in two consumer SKUs. You have the Pro version and the Standard version. You can only upgrade to Windows Media Center with the Pro version, which I think is stupid.
Okay.
And while it will include Windows Media Player, the player will not have DVD playback support. Will not have MPEG-2 support. It's a licensing cost that they want to not have to pay
for. Fraunhofer or somebody owns that, right?
And software, open source software like VLC, has that codec built in, but that's because it's free also.
Well, no, it's not because it's free. It's not a free Kodak. The VLC is violating the
But it's international patent. And its laws.
No, there's VLC is a patently illegal piece of software. They are stealing the Kodak from.
Shame on you for using VLC and right. Media Player and
Media Player Classic. Media Player Classic. All of those Kodak packs, which you shouldn't install because they will do bad things to your computer.
They don't have Kodak packs. It's built into the.
No, I'm saying VLC is different. VLC uses FFmpeg or something like that, or the equivalent to decrypt the video, or to decode the video rather. But yeah, their VLC doesn't have any licensing agreement with Fraunhofer or any of those places.
It seems kind of outrageous that in this day and age, something that is should be considered such a basic piece of functionality is you have to pay extra for it.
Yeah.
Well,
it's kind of like the original. Remember the original Xbox wouldn't play DVDs unless you
bought the remote.
That remote kit, because that's how they
really.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yep.
I totally forgot.
There was a little
that.
Plug-in dongle that went into one of the controller ports and a remote that came with it. And it wasn't just that you got a remote out, you know, and otherwise you would just have the option to play DVDs using the regular controller. No, it would not play DVDs unless you bought that thing.
Oh, you're talking about the original Xbox, not the 360. I thought you were talking about the original 360. Yeah,
and that was a big selling point of the PS2. That's why, I mean, the PS2, you could buy a remote, but it played Blu-ray or DVDs right off the bat with the controller.
Yeah. That's annoying.
I think that the there's two ways I look at this, right? Is if the next version of Windows comes out incredibly cheap, if we're looking at like a Apple style $30 or $50 price tag for Windows 8 for upgraders, I'm actually okay with them stripping out everything that has costs. But we're not going to do that. It's going to be $120, just like always.
Yep.
I mean, you're right, Norm. On the other hand, I love being surprised. I love happy surprises.
I mean, they're also expecting a lot of Windows 8 PCs, especially the ARM ones, not to have optical drives and Ultrabooks.
Well, right. I mean, there's no reason. I mean, when was the last time you watched a DVD on your Windows computer? Have you ever? I don't think
not
I have
in the past
on this computer.
Years.
Yeah.
No.
So yeah.
Or even on a laptop, even a MacBook.
I mean, it's just another. This is another nail in the coffin of Windows Media Player. I mean, that's a piece of software that is long past its expiration date.
I still use Zune as my desktop music player software outside of Spotify for streaming.
Okay.
But I've yet to be really happy with any piece of media player.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing good.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing good on Mac. It's not like
there's nothing good.
Media playing software is just not good generally. I think it's awkward and slow and has a whole host of problems. Let's see. There's this thing that's coming out. So hold on. Last step is. If you want to play discs on Windows, then you'll still be able to go out and buy DVD playing software from the normal suspects, InterVideo and CyberLink and all those guys.
Or probably come with your PC.
Or use VLC. Wi-Fi Alliance Passpoint. This is a new thing, and it's kind of interesting, but it's a little bit unclear exactly what it is and what it means. Norm, can you give the rundown?
When you walk, you know, when you go to a public Wi-Fi access spot, whether it's at SFO, you know, at the airport or at a Starbucks, you find the name of the hotspot, right? And there's no password, and you connect to it. And then you log in, and you get a splash page. We have to agree to the terms, right? You check, I agree. I'm not going to sue Starbucks if I see, you know.
Not going to sniff other people's connections.
Or I'll have to watch the 30-second BMW ad at the airport before you can watch internet. That is, it's a little bit inconvenient, but also it's not very transparent for people who don't know how to access Wi-Fi hotspots. The Wi-Fi Alliance wants to do is start certifying routers to have automatic handoffs between cellular networks and Wi-Fi hotspots. So instead of having to log in, if you are using an AT&T phone and the AT&T, your account information is on your SIM card, you can walk into a Starbucks, which uses AT&T for its internet service, and it will recognize you as AT&T customer and automatically hand you off to the Wi-Fi.
I like that.
At Starbucks.
Make the process more seamless.
And you don't have to do it over an open network.
You don't have to do
it.
Yeah. And it's a little more secure. And AT&T benefits because then you're not using their cellular network, takes a load off, and you're using their landline, the Wi-Fi. Like
this is a future tech thing.
Yeah.
Though,
so the Wi-Fi Alliance, which certifies devices, and when you see the Wi-Fi logo on a router, on a Wi-Fi card, or anywhere, that's because that device has been tested and certified by the Wi-Fi Alliance. They want to start getting the standard out to hardware, but you're going to need cooperation from the carriers. So the only carrier that's signed on right now is T-Mobile.
They're big on Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi hotspot.
And they helped develop this. It's called Passpoint. And it's while the other carriers acknowledge that it exists and the Wi-Fi Alliance is doing it, Sprint, Verizon, AT&T, they have not committed to joining the program just yet. Obviously, because they probably want to charge. I mean, AT&T wants to charge you for using the Wi-Fi hotspots. You don't
say. Well, AT&T gives free Wi-Fi hotspot access to AT&T cell customers,
right?
It is the
worst. Yeah. If you go to a hotel and, you know, some, more often than not, it's like if it's not free Wi-Fi, it's $20 or something, $10 a night.
$10
right? But then you also have that, you know, that drop-down menu. Oh, are you an AT&T customer? And they're like eight different options. Are you an iPhone user? Do you use AT&T broadband?
Are you a U-verse
customer? Damn. And the logins are never the same. I've never successfully been able to log in with my AT&T account because I use AT&T cellular.
No, it's not good.
No.
I mean, this is kind of analogous to the early days of cell phones, because I don't know if you remember in the like mid 80s, early 90s when cell phones were taking off. It used to be that your cell service was a bubble, right? So you'd like sign up for your local cell provider, and if you went outside and connected to somebody else's network, even if it was by accident and called someone, then you would get charged roaming charges. And it went from being like 10 cents a minute to being a dollar a minute or something crazy like that. Almost like the horror stories you hear about people going on cruise ships or going international and accidentally turning on their phone. I think that this is if this takes off and if the carriers get on board and if the people that run Wi-Fi hotspots, then you could end up in a situation where you pay your $10 a month to either through AT&T or to your wireless provider, and then you get mutually beneficial agreement where you can connect to everybody else's hotspot as long as they have an agreement with
that. Everyone else's hotspot thing is the thing that's very unlikely going to happen. What's going to happen is that AT&T, which I mean, they want to leverage the fact that they have 30,000 hotspots in the U.S. They want to make that a selling point to get people signed up on their data plan.
Right.
And so they'll say, you know, they'll develop their own standard, not call it Passpoint, and say, buy our iPhone, get an iPhone with AT&T, and it'll automatically connect to Wi-Fi anywhere.
Well, but the benefit of the Passpoint thing is it's implemented at a hardware standard level. So theoretically, the next version of Wi-Fi should have support for this built in at a low level. Mm-hmm. So it should just work, which will be a significant improvement over whatever AT&T's thing is, which will have to happen at a software level. So anyway.
The other thing
having
to do with Passpoint is that the register
a couple of the articles.
Yes, a couple of articles said that Passpoint within the standard has built in DRM. So,
but with no, like I dug in the white papers a lot this morning and couldn't find out, like I don't know where that came from.
Their claim is that the fear is with automatic authentication for these hotspots, you're also agreeing to restrict yourself to whatever content that they want you to watch or they will allow you to watch.
Right. my hunch is if that's what we're talking about, excuse me. Then we're talking about things like HBO Go and Comcast Xfinity and things like that, limiting to the kind of content you're subscribed to at home or whatever. I sent an email to my Wi-Fi Alliance contact this morning, so we'll hopefully get more details.
Hey, listen, I really hate to do this,
yeah,
but I feel really unwell.
Do you need to go?
I don't know. I don't want to go, but
do you want to lay down?
I'm going to lay down for a bit because my headache is so bad that I'm feeling
Don't seem yourself.
Quite nauseated.
No, go lay down.
I'm going to take a little break and see if I can come back in a bit.
I'll turn you down.
Okay.
Gary's sick.
Do you need a bucket or anything?
No, just like if I need to go, I'll run.
Okay.
Do you have puke bags?
I don't. You know, I heard a – I can't remember where I – well, I don't want to talk about
that
this.
That was the Patton Oswalt.
Was that the Patton Oswalt thing when we were in the car?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, if you had one special ability and the ability was to puke in a puke bag elegantly, how would you use that?
I would try to never use that.
I would never use it as well.
I've not puked in a long time. I keep my streak alive. Do we want to talk about Bing? Do you use Bing?
Yeah, no, I use Bing. I was thinking about whether I use Bing, but no.
I used Bing for the first time yesterday.
The only time I use Bing is Facebook search uses Bing.
I don't use Facebook search. What? I didn't know Facebook had search. I mean, I know we talked about it before, but I've never used it. I'm not much of a Facebook guy. I used Bing yesterday when I was having trouble with Google Instant, and Google search wasn't working at all.
Mm-hmm. Which is rare. Bing went through a redesign today, major redesign. You know, the thing I don't like about Google is I know they customize search results for each user, but a lot of those customized search results are tied to your Google Plus account. So I see the top of the search result. Oh, these people also wrote about this story or have linked to this article or something, but it's all with Google Plus and things I don't really care about. Bing is now integrating a bunch of social media into search results. So, when you type in a search, you get three columns. You get your standard search result on the left side. In the middle are ads or related searches. And on the right side, you have a separate column for Twitter and Facebook, because Microsoft is a big investor in Facebook.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if this is useful yet, but judging by the amount of articles that people post on Facebook, I could see it being useful with that amount of data.
Well, I mean, it's like the Twitter real-time search that Google had for a long time, right? Kind of. Not really?
No. It mines your Facebook feed.
Yeah.
And looks up keywords and it say, oh, this person might be an expert on like this restaurant or has read this story, and
yeah,
and you can connect to them there and ask them more questions about it.
But I profoundly dislike that stuff. I like a nice general search, the kind of search that every human being in the country is going to see. Like, I think everybody – I don't like the personalized search results, because usually it's just people who posted about stuff on Google Plus or Facebook or whatever.
You've been getting that on Google.
Yeah. Forever. No, I know. I don't like it on Google. You can turn it off on Google now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I turned it off. I was happy.
Or open, you know, incognito search and then search that way.
That works too. Google Plus, the iOS version of Google Plus, got a redesign yesterday as well.
I have not seen it yet.
It looks really nice.
Does it do anything different?
It works. It doesn't crash all the time.
I don't think it does anything different than what Google Plus did before.
I don't know that it does anything different. I haven't used it enough to know, but it definitely looks prettier, and there's all sorts of cool flat shading, and like the cues to push you at posts are much better, and it seems to be a lot faster. And like I said, hasn't crashed.
It's funny that they released the iOS version first.
Well, I think that's good, because I mean the Android people are probably already tied in. The Android version of the app was much better than the iOS version of the app to begin with. So I think iOS needed the help. Kickstarter, this is something you
Gary actually sent me a link to this.
Oh, Gary sent the link to this. Well, I'll save until he's back then. We'll put it on the back burner. Do you want to talk about sharks with lasers?
I think that attaching laser beams to sharks as a publicity stunt.
Give context.
I think that attaching laser beams to sharks as a publicity stunt is incredibly stupid.
Why is that, Norm?
Because there's no scientific benefit at all to doing it, and you're just bothering the sharks.
And the reference is also lame.
The reference is a movie from 15 years ago.
Right.
Almost 15 years ago.
That hasn't aged well at this point.
No, that has not aged well.
Yeah.
As well as an Ace Ventura movie, I guess.
Okay.
Wicked Lasers, who makes high-powered lasers.
Toy lasers, though. They're like 50 milliwatt lasers versus 3.
They're the ones
lasers.
who said they had the lightsaber laser. They're supposedly high powered lasers. They're blue lasers and green lasers that
they're
sell
novel lasers.
Very novel.
Yeah, and they're very expensive.
Mm-hmm. They went on an expedition and attached their lasers to a shark's fin as a way of paying tribute to Austin Powers and the joke about sharks with freaking lasers on their head. And shot a video with it and then made a big deal about it. I didn't think it was very novel at all.
You were not impressed.
I was not impressed. If they did something with the lasers,
yeah.
If the lasers help the sharks like find food or something,
no.
Then there's something interesting there, but no.
Well, have you ever attached a laser pointer to an animal before?
No, I assume that would be the death of a cat.
Yeah, so what happens is the because we try this with, you know, naturally when you get a new dog or something and you try all sorts of stupid stuff. What happens is the Chloe got super obsessed with the laser and was chasing it around like a maniac, nonstop, or just all the time.
Running into walls?
Running into walls, everything, just trying to get the laser. It's not nice. It's not a nice thing to do. I got to assume because of where the shark's eyes are, then the shark's not going to actually be able to see the laser in front of it.
Nope.
But it seemed like there was no, like they said that maybe you could tell which direction the shark was going. It seemed more like they were testing out mounts for the fin than anything that had to do with the laser. And the laser thing was just
there's more value in attaching a GoPro to a shark.
I'd love to see a GoPro attached to a shark
on a shark.
That would be amazing. Yeah. So that's the sharks with lasers for eyes. There's some other cool shark stuff. I don't want to talk about it now, but I've been talking to some folks about some cool, very cool shark stuff that maybe we'll have on the site in the not too distant future. Internet Explorer coming to the Xbox.
Okay.
Today I learned that both the PS3 and the Wii have web browsers.
We had a web browser at its launch. It was some people use it.
No, well, it was Odd Opera, right? It's opera based. I mean, I could kind of see it on the Wii because you almost have a mouse pointer there, right? You can use the Wiimote and aim it up and down, and you know, you have a cursor. You need a cursor for the web.
I don't need the web on TV.
That's the thing, is the web doesn't work very well on the TV. Although they're saying this is a full Internet Explorer implementation. I don't know if that has Flash. It'll be interesting to see how long it takes before things like HBO Go and Hulu and all that are blocked.
I don't need the web on a console.
Not interested
in Norman the web Chan. On my TV. I don't know who is interested. Is it one of those checkbox features where people are, you know, in the forums, oh, PS3 has it. Why doesn't Xbox have it? It's a reason to buy the PS3.
I don't know. It seems like another step in the evolution of the Xbox away from being a gaming console into being a living room web TV 3.0.
Why go with the web and not use apps designed for the interface?
Well, because if they're not going to open the app market so that people can just submit their own stuff, then having the web is the stopgap. I mean, the problem Microsoft's having with the Xbox right now is they can't decide if they want it to be an open ecosystem where everybody develops and submits their stuff.
So you're talking about just like HTML5 apps that are designed for the Xbox.
That's my assumption is what their hope is. I can't imagine that people are going to actually do it. It seems unwise. It's probably also part of a transitional, you know, it's got to be part of the transition toward the next generation consoles too, because you know that they're going to be more appy and more living roomy and less gamey. Than the current generation, I think. Also in the Xbox front, the $99 Xbox rumor, I think we talked about it a little bit last week, but it's actually a real thing. You can buy an Xbox now for $99 up front with a 2-year service plan, essentially just like a cell phone.
Yeah, that's very weird that you can buy. It's the 4 GB Kinect model, which I think sells for $300. And
I think it's $250 now.
It's $284 on Amazon.
Okay.
And it's $99 with a 2-year contract for Xbox Live Gold, which is normally $60 a year.
But the $284 one comes with the Kinect, right?
They all come with the Kinect. Oh, this bundle comes with the Kinect.
Okay.
And you can only buy it at the Microsoft store.
Like the one in the mall?
The physical Microsoft store.
So there's like, what, 10
you
of those
now?
Put on
a coupon. You go to the Microsoft store, and if you can't pay $284 now on Amazon to buy a Xbox with Kinect, you can sign up for a 2-year contract to pay $15 a month for Xbox Live Gold and then get the Xbox up front for $99.
Yeah, but if you buy Xbox Live Gold in the card form, it's $60 for a year. So it's $5 a month, right?
$5 a month or cheaper with deals.
So you're paying essentially $284 extra and you end up – so you're paying an extra $100.
You're paying extra $70-$80, yeah.
Plus you get the live.
Over the 2 years, yes.
Yeah, don't do that. It's a bad idea. Bad idea, Jeans. Okay, so moving on. We already talked about the Laser Shards.
Yeah, does anyone actually use Xbox without Gold? I think it's one of those services. Like I know a lot of people who have PS3s that don't pay for the extra PS Plus service.
The Plus. I actually kind of like the Plus.
What do you get from the Plus that you actually use?
They have free stuff all kind of not. I don't want to say all the time, but frequently there is something free in there for you or deeply discounted. So you'll get like stacking and it's not just old crap, although sometimes it is kind of old. Like I think Rayman 3 was a free thing for PlayStation Plus people the other day. So you frequently be kind of new release or archive stuff.
Is it just timed free stuff? Like for next week you get to play something for free?
Well, if you download it, then it's free for – it's yours forever.
Oh, so you just have to be on
You just
the
have
network.
To be – you just have to – like it encourages you to come back and check every week to see what's up and what's free. The other thing you'll do is get like timed limited demos. You can download like full versions of Sony games, first party games, and you get like a 2-hour demo.
So it's a lot of value added stuff. Unlike Xbox, where if you don't have gold, you have a crippled Xbox.
Yeah.
You can get game updates, which you need anyway to play many games. But you can't have multiplayer. You can't run any of the apps. You can't run Netflix. You can't play YouTube.
Yeah, you can't run
anything.
Any of the apps. You can't watch the Today Show. No Kathy Lee and Hoda for you. I think that's pretty much it. It's apps and...
But everyone's come to terms with the fact that they're okay paying $60 a year.
Well, I play multiplayer, so I don't care. I mean, that's the thing.
I'm saying everyone's okay paying to play multiplayer.
The bad thing is I've reached the point where... Well, it used to be that you paid to play multiplayer to get the experience with the voice and the whole nine yards. That's now common on other platforms. And now I pay because that's where my kind of best kempt friends list is.
So it's
like I'm paying because everybody else
your
is
gaming
there.
Social life is held hostage by Microsoft for $60 bucks a month or $60 a year.
Yeah, that's the long and short of it.
I mean, I reached a point last year where I got the warning your Xbox Live Gold account is going to expire, and I had to think seriously if I wanted to renew.
Well, the unfortunate thing is now that HBO Go is a thing, and I sometimes will be playing in the, playing a game on the Xbox in the other room, and Gina's out here watching something on HBO, I've had to get Gold for her now too, because she's actually using Gold more than I am. Like, I, there's, you know, because my Xbox Live multiplayer
it's per user, not per Xbox.
And it's also very dependent on like what games are out. Like the amount I use it is very dependent on what games are out. So when Mass Effect came out, we played a ton, and I was totally fine with paying the $5 or $10 or whatever it ended up being that month. But now we're in another one of those lulls, and I probably won't. I mean, there's not another multiplayer game probably until the fall that I'll be into on Xbox. So,
you know, while HBO Go on the Xbox interface is much better than Comcast's HBO interface on the blue interface on the set-top box,
yeah.
I still use the set-top box more because the streaming is more consistent. The playback is more consistent.
Oh, I don't have any problems with the playback on the HBO Go app. The problem I have is that the HBO Go app is really, really hard to navigate. Like, it's awful. It's funny. I can't remember who I was talking to about this the other day, but like it takes longer. And this is really saying something given the new Xbox interface. It takes longer to find something in the app, even if it's exposed on the home screen, on one of the home screens, than it does to actually launch the app and launch the Xbox.
Yeah, it's a little slow.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not super impressed with it. I wish HBO Go was working on the Roku because that looks like a much better app.
The easiest thing right now still is if you have like an Xfinity app on the iPad and then you use that, connect to your set-top box, do the search there, and then just send the command to the set-top box to play the video.
Yeah, but I don't have a set-top box. I use a TiVo instead. TiVo. Yeah. Oh, we can talk about that in a little bit, because I did try out the Xfinity app on TiVo, which is new. Hobbit 48p, 48 FPS. Hobbit is out.
The Hobbit is not out.
Well, the Hobbit, people have seen footage.
People have seen a few minutes of footage from the Hobbit. Peter Jackson, the Hobbit's coming out this December, and Peter Jackson has been shooting it. I think the movie, principal photography, is definitely done on the movie. It's all in post right now. But he shot it all digital, and he bought a couple dozen Red Epic cameras to shoot this movie.
Yeah.
Not only did he shoot the movie in 4K, he also shot it at 48 FPS. Which is a very unconventional frame rate for cinema, which usually typically you see movies at 24 frames per second. And his whole argument is that with 48 frames per second, you can see much smoother motion. So it's like the motion interpolation effect that you get on TV when you turn that on certain TVs. A lot of people call it the soap opera effect, but instead of it being interpolated, all the frames are actually there.
So like, this is one of those things that games have been trying to emulate for years, right? Getting filmic motion blur.
No, games are doing the other way around. Games have been trying to add blur in,
right,
to make any frame rate, whether it's 30 FPS, 60 Hertz, locked in with VSync on, to look like a 24 Hertz.
To look like a film.
To look like film without actually going down to 24 frames per second, because that's not how motion works in games. Rendering motion is not the same as filming motion.
Right.
So with 48 frames per second in cinema, you need both the camera to shoot at 48 FPS. You need the projector to project at 40 FPS. So it is another set of equipment that you need. And the footage that he demoed of The Hobbit, they showed off, I think it was like a month back, was not very well received.
Yeah, people were actively upset about it.
A lot of people tweeted about it, saying that they weren't convinced that, you know, this is the future of cinema. It's looked weird. I think shooting digital by itself makes film look a little different. If you've seen the Hobbit trailer, you've probably seen it whether on your computer or at a theater. It was not at 48 frames per second, but it looked a little different. Like the lighting looks different. The way it looks less grainy. And Peter Jackson's very defensive about this. I think we'll have to see the full movie to get what he's going for. I think he wouldn't have shot it in 48 frames per second if he wasn't going to take advantage of that. And I don't know. I don't know if it'll be any good.
I'm really interested to see, because I haven't seen the trailer. I haven't looked at the footage at all. But I wouldn't expect that to be something that people would pick up on immediately. Like most people would notice immediately. I wonder if because he was showing it at a cinema convention.
I think
essentially.
It's something you're going to pick up immediately.
Really? Okay. Well, we'll see. It's December, right?
It's December.
A bunch of studio theater owners have said they're going to, you know, show it in 48 frames a second as he requests. So we shall see. It almost seems to me like he's trying to make a mark on, like make his mark on cinema as, hey, you know. We moved to, you know, from silent pictures to talkies to color to 3D to is a less offensive.
Filmmakers are all they're trying different things all the time. I mean, whether it's 3D or 4K or IMAX or different frame rates, it's everything pushes the medium forward.
So you sent me, speaking while we're talking about film, you sent me a really interesting article yesterday about film archiving and the kind of the conversation that this is something that DRM activists have been talking about for years, but it's a little bit more involved now. And like there's a conversation happening now in the film archiving world about whether film is the right medium to archive movies on, or we should transition to digital or something else.
The digital versus film argument goes beyond the archiving. And a lot of that is because studios are pushing theaters to buy digital projectors.
Well, and theaters are embracing digital projectors because they're a lot cheaper to own and maintain.
They're cheaper to maintain, but not cheaper to buy initially. And they are cheaper to run. So the way a digital projector works, and most projectors now, I think we really started seeing digital projectors back when Revenge of the Sith came out. They're 2K projectors, not many 4K projectors out in the field right now. And when I watched like the Avengers, for example, it was in digital and it was in 2K and it was in.
Hold on, was that the one that we saw or was that there? We saw a film projection.
It was like the Cinema XD system, which is owned by Century Theaters. It looked worse than film. I could see the aliasing on the pixels.
When you see blocking, I mean, the thing that I notice is the blocking.
Well, it's not the artifacting. It's not compression artifacts. Well, but it's extremely high bitrate. But when you see it's just the resolution itself is not as high as 35 millimeter film projected on the screen. You can see along diagonal lines, like in text,
yeah,
in text overlays. When the marquee comes up and it says Marvel or Paramount, you can see along the edges, it is not
the
perfectly
circular
smooth.
Swoosh of the Paramount.
Yeah, and there's no hardware, you know, anti-aliasing. Is just straight up aliasing on the lines. It looks markedly worse than film. But you're right. Studios want to push digital because 3D is – films are shot in digital one. Arguably, there are some films like animated films which look fine on digital because that's the medium which was produced. Most films go through a digital mastering process anyway.
So you're saying they get shot on film, they convert to digital, they're edited digitally and then written back out to film.
Mm-hmm. But there are imperfections with the digital system also because we're talking about files, and files that get streamed or put on some type of storage format and then brought to a theater at certain there have been many reports at screenings, whether it's Avengers or movies before, where projectionists had to delay the start of a film because of the problem. Because
they deleted the file.
One file or another was deleted, and they have to re-download the file.
I mean, that's happened with films, though, too. Rory and I went to see a screening of the Adjustment Bureau or something where they got to the third reel, and the film was torn, kept tearing. And they just said, well, we're canceling the screening. That's it.
Did you get a refund?
No, I didn't pay for the screening.
When I saw Batman Forever... Same first 10 minutes movie.
The Joel Schumacher one?
Joel Schumacher one, Val Kilmer one. First 10 minutes movie was broken because of the film reel. And stuff like that happens all the time. So it happens on both film and digital formats. But going back to the archivists discussion, archivists now don't know what to do with the digital format. So like for the longest time, they archive film 35 millimeter, 16 millimeters. It's great for archiving because the system's in place. But they're also then hesitant to show the movie because every time they break out the 16 millimeter film and they have to find the right equipment to play it, they have to play it, and then they risk wearing down the celluloid when they play it. So from archivist perspective, there's value in it's expensive.
And every time you it's just like a cassette tape or a record. Every time you play that record, you're losing information. You know, you're potentially damaging the master.
Yes.
So,
but archiving digital presents a whole new set of challenges because they don't have the infrastructure in place. They don't have IT in place.
Well, but not only that, but the standards change in technology at a much more rapid pace than they do with film. You know, a 16 millimeter film projection, like that equipment has been around for 40 or 50 years at this point, and it's readily available. With the digital, even in the last 20 years, the digital interfaces, not just for the codecs and the containers for the video files, but actually also the physical specs for the hard drive have changed four or five times. So that if you have a PATA hard drive from 1993 right now, you may or may not have a PC that you can plug that into and make it play.
And there is no right answer to this problem. We're in this growing pains period right now. But you have to go back to the purpose of archiving. Why do people archive films? What is the point of that? Is it so we have a record of these films, so there's a resource to go back to preserve them? Or
seems like it's so you can sell DVDs later down the line,
well,
right?
Well, one of the biggest things that happen in film archiving is YouTube and just having clips on YouTube of movies and being able to have a searchable database of films. And that's perfectly fine for this purpose. So there could be this marriage of having, you know, all the clips indexed, you know, transcribed and searchable on some type of online database.
Yeah.
And that's when you want to access that, it's readily available, but then also have the, you know, 16 or 35 millimeter or 80 millimeter stocks, you know, in a warehouse somewhere.
Well, and that's kind of what they do now, right? I mean, the nice thing about films that are made today is that they're ubiquitous. So even if you're looking at something that's DR, this was the argument against DRM, just one of the big arguments against DRM when they started talking about Blu-ray and DVD and things like that as well, is that even though these disc-based formats are ubiquitous, because the encryption keys were at the launch times were thought to be super secure and safe, they were afraid that you wouldn't be able to play the movie on the disc once the Blu-ray master activation servers went down or the DVD keys got lost or whatever. So it turns out to have not been a problem because breaking the encryption's pretty trivial. But anyway, I thought that was super interesting. There's a story. You put a story about that on the site, I think, didn't you, Norm?
No.
No?
No.
The American Airlines.
I want to talk about George Lucas.
Oh.
For 1 second.
Well, hold on. Let's start. I'll
talk about George Lucas. The American Airlines thing is a whole other thing. I'm hoping Gary feels better because I'm interested to see what he has to say about that. Gary, update. Still sick. Still lying on the couch right now.
Well, hold on. Before we talk about, let's talk about the Star Wars stuff first, because they're doing the Star Wars weekend at Disney World, and there's a couple of cool things out of that. The Droid Factory, which I saw this morning. I think Denny, a friend of the site, Denny Atkins, linked it on Twitter this morning, and.
Star Wars Weekends is an annual celebration of Star Wars only at Disney World.
Yes, so in Orlando.
So it's a little confusing because I had never been to Disney World before. And Disney World has a separate, smaller theme park that requires separate admission called Hollywood Studios. And so
it used to be Disney MGM Grand, I think, right?
I don't know about that. But while Disneyland is based in LA by Hollywood and has a lot of the movie stuff, Disney World has a separate Hollywood Studios theme park. So it's kind of like California Adventure, but the Disney World equivalent. You can buy like two passes and get into both the full theme park and the separate one. But at Hollywood Studios, every year they run this celebration called Star Wars Weekends. And it goes on for like about a month. It's starting real soon, middle of May. And they bring some actors from Star Wars. I think Kenny Baker has been there a couple of times. Definitely not the big stars. I don't think Mark Hamill does Star Wars Weekends or Carrie Fisher at Disney World. But like the kid who played Boba Fett, or I guess Jake Lloyd, also appears.
Oh boy, Jake Lloyd. He's like 20 now, isn't he?
I don't know. Probably.
Yeah, don't want to talk about that. Probably.
I don't think he doesn't want to talk about it. No one wants to talk about that. They do a couple promotions. So like you said before, they're doing this custom droid promotion, where you can make your own droid.
Like an R2 unit.
Yes.
They're the size of the Kenner action figures, the classic Kenner action figures that I grew – I mean, I don't know if you had Star Wars action figures when you were a kid, but they were very popular for me, for kids my age. And you can make one that looks like whatever you want. They had dozens and dozens of designs. They have funny hats for them. They have different attachments. They have different legs, different arms, all the different body styles. So you can basically – it seemed like there were a couple of 100,000 different possible outcomes.
So it's like Build-A-Bear.
They had there.
But for droids.
Exactly. So yeah, the Disney's Hollywood Studios used to be MGM Studios. It's where Tower of Terror and all that stuff is.
It's where
they have Tower of Terror. They have a car ride. It's where the fake Muppet Studios are. It's where the animation studios are. So it used to be that you could take a tour through the Cell Animation Studios and see. I think they were, last time I was there, they were doing Brother Bear, which I think probably wasn't very good. But was the last animated movie that they produced out of the Orlando MGM studio office. And now it's called Hollywood.
Probably
Studios.
Not as cool as Backlot Tram Tour.
I don't even know what that is.
The best part of Universal Studios, Hollywood.
This was a Backlot Tour. You get in a little cart and there's like the fringed roof and you kind of tool around and they say, well, here's where blah, blah, blah was shot. And here's where this was shot. And here's where this was shot. And then, you know, you look at this.
The other promotion they're running at Disney World for Star Wars weekends is the ability to put your face in a slab of carbonite, freeze yourself in carbonite. So, like Han was frozen, they will do a 3D scan of
Wait,
your face.
Really?
Well, it's not a giant. It's not a life size one. It is only an 8-inch figure. If it was a life size one, would you do it?
Oh, absolutely.
How much would you pay for that?
No amount of money would be too much.
$100,000.
I don't have $100,000.
Okay, well.
I would pay whatever I needed to pay that I could afford in order to have a full size Will Smith frozen
in carbonite. Frozen
carbonite. Do the lights blink on the side?
Well, not on the 8-inch model. The 8-inch model is just it looks like a CNC print. Actually, it looks like one of those figure prints, the World of Warcraft prints.
Yeah.
I bet it uses the exact same type of
the powder
based printer technology. Yeah. You can tell actually by the layering.
Man, I would do anything for a life-size me frozen in carbonite.
So this one is 8 inches. You can pay. You have to kind of set a reservation ahead of time. It's $100. But if you go Disney World, you can put your face. It doesn't scan your full body. It's just your face. So ladies will get Han's body, but you will get it shipped to you in about 4 weeks, which I think for some fans it's worth it. But yeah, if I think there are like local or not maybe local, but there are regional artists who will do commissions if you wanted to put your body in carbonite.
Maybe. I feel like it has to be official and it has to have the blinky lights and also.
Why would you want it to be official?
A Boba Fett suit.
If it was official, then that means everyone else could get one.
Hmm. Well, I'm not an elitist like you, Norm. Yeah. Just because everybody else can get it doesn't mean it's not cool.
It does devalue it.
Oh,
absolutely devalues it.
So also on the Star Wars and George Lucas front, George Lucas is. Well, he was trying to build a Lucasfilm studio.
A
new studio in Marin.
Yes.
Down his road, which is Lucas Valley Ranch, which I didn't realize as I was driving down Lucas Valley Ranch Road that it was
named after
Lucas family. Yeah.
Yep.
But have you ever been back there? Have you driven back there and driven like to West Marin?
I've driven
to
San Rafael area where LucasArts used to be before they moved the Presidio in California or in San Francisco.
So this is it's a weird road. Like it's all on one side, it's all farmland. On the other side, it's all subdivisions. And then eventually you just get to a point where it's like wilderness on either side. Right. And there's a couple of big fences that mark the edge of the Lucas estates. And on the second place, he wanted to build this studio. Mm-hmm. It's something that his family's owned for a long time. Apparently
he owns the land.
Yeah. But he was having trouble with local residents, you know, the so-called NIMBYs, the not in my backyards, who didn't want a backlot movie studio.
These are people who are relatively well off.
Marin
is one of the highest,
it's a very
expensive.
High income.
Yeah. Yes.
It's even the farmers are incredibly wealthy in Marin. Yes. So it's
average house prices are very high in Marin County.
And this is a pretty nice, I don't want to say it's a neighborhood. It's not really a neighborhood, but it's a nice area. It's very,
I don't think I'd call it very neighborhood. It's kind of like in the mountains, in the hills.
It's the kind of place that you see a horse barn and there's horses standing outside and the horses probably cost more than your house.
Okay.
So,
they didn't want they're George Lucas's neighbors and they didn't want him building a studio there. Because even though he had done all the research for
environmental impact and all that business,
because they said that it would increase traffic,
that's probably true.
The area plus it would like divert the path of a stream that they wanted to go that they like they were fond of. So he abandoned his plans to build a new studio in his back in the land that he owns, and now is offering to donate that land for low income housing.
Or for the elderly.
Or for as a retirement community.
Right. So basically the neighbors said, no, we don't want to have your project here. And George Lucas, instead of shooting first, basically is saying, fuck you, we're going to use this property for either poor people, the poors, or the olds.
Yeah, people that rich people...
The undesirables.
I like the idea that George Lucas is using the low-income housing as a weapon against rich neighbors.
Well, and it's the kind of thing that, like, you can't say, no, I don't want to have the low-income housing in my neighborhood.
I think they're absolutely going to say that.
Well, I'm sure they are.
It's going to look bad, but I think they're absolutely going to say that.
It's going to end up being the olds.
It's one of the reasons that Bart doesn't go up there.
Really?
Because they don't want the undesirables.
Wow, is that why Bart doesn't go? I always wonder why Bart doesn't go to the North Bay.
Because it's all always voted down.
Wow.
Yeah.
Marin sucks. That tunnel under the Golden Gate would be really expensive too.
Yes.
The
Golden Gate Bridge is terrible for commuting.
Oh,
it's
yeah, we know.
It's a narrow bridge.
Yeah, we remember. Well, and traffic bumps up against each other practically. So yeah, there you go, George Lucas. I don't
know if he's a hero.
No, he's not a hero.
No,
he's an asshole.
Yeah.
This is very clearly an asshole move, but I think I thought it was funny. Let's see. Lightroom's out on the Mac App Store. Do you what are you using to manage photos these days, Norm? Since you're taking a lot more photographs.
Windows Explorer?
You don't have you don't do something to manage RAW versions and JPEG versions?
I don't shoot RAW.
Oh, you don't shoot RAW?
Why would you shoot RAW? I don't need that much processing.
Okay. Well, so Lightroom is out on the Mac App Store. It's, I think, the first big Adobe app that's out. It's $150. I was thinking about downloading and trying it out because I have fondness for Lightroom, but I don't really shoot RAW anymore. So I'm not the person who should do that. But if you wanted to try it out, I think it might be interesting. And then Wolfenstein 3D's 20th anniversary was yesterday, I think.
Maybe it was
day before.
20th anniversary. So
do you remember playing Wolf 3D?
Definitely. I had Wolf 3D on 386. One of the greatest pieces of shareware ever. And I've played on multiple platforms. SNES version. I mean, it's one of those things. Like the Pocket PC, I had a Wolf 3D port for that.
Did you ever play the iPhone version?
No, I didn't because they charged for that. So it was the 20th anniversary of Wolfenstein 3D. There are many, many people out there. There's maybe some people listening to this podcast right now who've never played Wolf 3D, don't remember when it came out.
Well, it's funny because I was looking at this video. So the reason we're talking about this is that John Carmack and
– Well, Bethesda.
Bethesda
now owns id Software.
Nick Brecken and John Carmack basically sat down and they talked about Wolfenstein 3D while John seemed to be playing Wolf 3D.
He did a director's commentary of Wolfenstein 3D for 18 minutes. How cool is that? John Carmack. I mean, every time he talks, it's interesting. Every time he tweets, it's interesting.
Yeah, usually his tweets are really deeply encoded, though. You have to go in and hit Wikipedia pages to figure out what the hell he's talking about. This was a good talk, but the funny thing to me was the top comment was a guy saying, "This is for all the kids who thought that Call of Duty and Halo were the first person shooters. This was the beginning. It wasn't the first-person shooter because I think Commander Keen and some of those other games had first-person elements, Rise of the Triad and those types of things.
All around the same time.
But this was the first one that was fast.
I mean, he wasn't playing a port. He was playing the DOS version.
Yes.
Which was coded, to run in DOS with assembly language. And it was done on in less than a year by a very small team. And John Carmack talks about how that type of rush of development, you don't really see that. I mean, you can't have it really in a AAA title. You do see it in the indie game scene right now, which he didn't really address. But he really had fond memories of Wolfenstein 3D. And a lot of little insights, like the big difference between Doom and Wolf 3D enemies. Wolf 3D had enemies wandering around. You have that moment where you open a door and a Nazi soldier is walking past but doesn't come straight at you. You can close the door and run away. In Doom, the enemy, you're a magnet for fire. And every time you walk in the room, the imps just run at you. He talked about porting it to SNES, and they didn't have the dogs in this NES version.
Nazi rats.
They were Nazi rats, not Nazi dogs. You can't shoot dogs in a SNES game, in a Nintendo game.
Oh, Nintendo.
And then he also talked about going back and looking at that source and how when he opened up the source code, and they had to port it later to iOS and other platforms and Jaguar and stuff, which I think he said it was his favorite version.
Yeah,
of it.
He said he actually went through and listed the ports that he did himself, which I thought were interesting. That and Jaguar and SNES. And
it was programmed 16-bit, and a lot of people, the community actually took the source and helped him with the ports, and he actually took the modified code, which helped him get it to 32-bit without having to go from scratch.
Running on iOS.
And, yeah. And it's just a lot of really, really cool insights. And of course, John Carmack was playing Wolf 3D, which is in itself kind of cool to think about.
One of the interesting things that came out of that, I thought, was that he said, you know, he played the game so much during development that by the time they were final and actually came out, he didn't experience a lot of the, you know, obviously if you're working on a game, you don't experience the same way somebody who's playing a game for the first time does when they buy it and open it up. But I think I kind of got the feeling that he hadn't played that much of Wolfenstein beyond the first few levels.
I don't think most people haven't played version. Wolfenstein.
Shareware, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those, I mean, I guess the demo experience is kind of the same now, but it was such the first chapter of Wolfenstein, the first chapter of Doom is a massive shared experience.
That's true.
For gamers.
Well, and you think about how much time you put into Wolfenstein Shareware or Doom Shareware. I mean, you could get a lot of gameplay out of Doom Shareware because multiplayer was enabled in the whole nine yards. It all worked. I don't know. It was a kind of different time. Chloe, here's somebody outside. The other thing that happened this week is Valve released the Portal.
There's the browser-based Wolfenstein 3D now. They also released.
Oh, that's free. Yeah,
that's free. Yeah. So if you want to go back and relive Wolfenstein or play it for the first time, you can check that out. But yeah, Portal 2.
Portal user, have you played with this at all? The user-generated maps? They call it the infinite enhancement or something. I don't remember the specifics. But the upshot is Portal is out. You can build Portal puzzles yourself. I downloaded that automatically because I still had it installed. But I went through and made some Portal maps the other day. And the things that they've done, like, Chloe, quiet. Woofing.
Scruff.
The quiet woof. The things that they've done with that map, with the map editor, are astounding. Like, it's in the days from using, like,
something craft.
Yeah, I want to say it was WorldCraft.
I think it might have been WorldCraft. I remember seeing two-page ads for that in magazines, and you had to buy it as a separate piece of software.
Yeah, exactly. It used to be a Quake editor, right?
It was a Half-Life editor.
Yeah, so the advancement from there and even using like U3Ed and those types of tools, it's amazing because it's basically something like you would get in a game, like a Tribes map, a Trials map editor or something like that. It's very easy to use. It's really straightforward. It's much more powerful than I kind of thought it was. At first, and you can make maybe not the full the maps that you would get in you know, say using Valve's real tools, but you can make pretty good approximation of them. And
there's a whole voting system to get the best maps.
Yeah, well, it works with the Steam Workshop stuff that they introduced with, I think, Oblivion maybe or TF2, and not Oblivion, it's Skyrim or TF2. It was pretty cool. It's neat. It's worth checking out and seeing how easy it is to make Portal maps. Making a good Portal puzzle is much more difficult than I really appreciated.
I think level designing in general is much more difficult than anyone appreciates.
Well, but yeah, if you think about Portal, though, it's all based on those cubes, right? Like the wall panel sized cubes, especially in Portal 2, are the basic unit of that world. In kind of the same way Wolfenstein, the basic unit was one square wall, right? I don't know. I thought it was neat. It's worth looking at if you have any interest at all in making games. And, you know, who knows if you make.
But you need
puzzles.
To own Portal 2.
Portal 2 costs $4 now.
Okay.
If you don't own Portal 2, you should buy Portal 2. It's a very good game. One of my favorites from last year.
Even available on Mac.
You. Last couple of things. Kickstarter's Bridge, iPad, laptop, dock. This is the thing.
I guess there are a bunch of Kickstarter projects now. They sold out of that watch. They sold out of the Pebble watch.
You don't say.
After selling, I think, what was it, 85,000?
There are going to be so many disappointed people who use iPhones and buy that thing when it doesn't do anything that they want it to do.
Yeah.
The Bridge.
This is a laptop or an iPad.
Dock.
Dock case. I guess it's more of a dock than a case, but a Bluetooth keyboard that supposedly turns the iPad into a laptop. And I don't like that idea.
Yeah, it seems like a really ill-advised idea. They basically have lifted a lot of Apple industrial design. It's a solid block of aluminum with a keyboard built in, a chiclet keyboard built in. It has the same kind of straight edges on the top and the bevel. You slot the iPad into what looks like a little sleeve, like a grabby thing, and then flip it down. And you turn your – it's $250, I think, is the one with speakers.
So expensive.
It seems like it's a lot of money for something that is I'm not particularly impressed with.
At that point, buy a MacBook Air.
That's, I mean, that's, well, I mean, you're still looking at probably, what, $750 minimum for that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're looking at not much of a value add for a lot of money. And it doesn't even have extra battery or anything like that to make the iPad last longer. And then,
well, I mean, sorry, at that price, you know, get a transformer.
I don't think that's a good idea either. And let's save the airplane thing for next week.
No, I can talk about it now. I mean, I don't think Gary.
Okay. So American Airlines had this thing called a golden ticket.
Oh my God. If they offered this now, no, if they offered it now for $1 million, I would jump on it right now.
How would you, you can't sell the ticket. Okay. So explain what it is.
What it is back in the '80s when interest rates were high.
Yes.
And American Airlines ran a promotion, that said you can buy our golden ticket for $250,000, which in the '80s and now it's a lot of money. And if you consider interest was at 15%, 15 to 20%, American Airlines stood to make a lot of money from this. But what it would offer is that for the rest of your life, and also depending, I guess the price also depending on how old you were, for the rest of your life, you could have unlimited first class flights.
It's first class?
First class flights to anywhere that using American Airlines. And if you want to pay an additional $100,000, so it would be $350,000. You could also have a guest, any guest. And
this does sound like the best deal ever.
It
considering
is,
that a first class ticket cost $1,500 to $2,000 at that point.
If you fly first class from, you know, now to London or something, it is several thousand dollars.
Yeah.
Only about 40 people took advantage of this deal.
Well, it's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
I mean, and also, if you like, who knew that American Airlines would last the next 30 years? Because at that point, Pan Am and Eastern were still around too.
Sure,
so.
Sure. Still, if you look back, and even now, it is, if they offered it now, I mean, most people obviously weren't young. This would have been the best present for someone.
Give a 16-year-old?
Give a 10-year-old.
Graduate from college?
Yeah.
Or graduate from high school?
The rest of your life, fly. And people took it. The people who did buy it use way more than $350,000 worth of flights. So the story, I think it was from The Atlantic, profiled two people. Two guys who are in their 60s who bought this. And
well, the story came up because they're trying to take them away from people.
They were taken away because they're losing so much money. And do you remember in the movie Up in the Air, George Clooney reached his magic goal of 10 million miles flown, right? These guys don't even remember when they hit 10 million miles. They're at the 20, 30, 35 million mile mark on American Airlines.
What, 40 times around the world per no, it's more than that.
If you're talking about from here just across to New York, like 2,000 miles, round trip, let's say 5,000 miles round trip, do the math quickly. That's 20 times for
a million.
No, for 100,000.
Wow, 200 times?
200 times for a million, 2,000 times. If you fly 2,000 times, you'll reach 10 million miles.
Well, the big mistake they made is that they still let them collect frequent flyer miles on this.
They still collected frequent flyer miles, and they could accompany any guests. So some of these people, which had their – they had their gold ticket revoked, they started selling their tickets.
Or they would give money. They would take money, basically. They didn't sell the ticket. They'd give a companion.
Yes. They would accept money to give the seat up to a companion. And also they would book extra seats for nothing but like just to extra legroom, as if you needed – extra room on a first class flight.
Or they would book on either side three flights because they weren't sure if they were going to be able to make it to the airport by 2 o'clock or something like that. This is essentially like getting a Euro rail pass for a month, but for the whole world.
But for flying and for around the world and first class, which means the story is like if these people was watching Travel Channel and they saw that there was a restaurant that Anthony Bourdain went to and it was a new restaurant opened in New York, and the next episode had a great barbecue joint in, you know, Atlanta or something. They could, an hour later, be on a flight, first class flight to New York, then go to the place in Atlanta, and then come back the next day or 2 days later.
It means when the salmon are running in Alaska, you go up and have a meal and then fly back.
On a whim.
Incredibly wasteful, but also totally awesome.
Totally awesome. If they offer, and they stopped offering it in 1993 because they realized they were hemorrhaging money. From these people who are flying more than $1 million worth of plane tickets.
Flying three times a day sometimes. Oh, that squirrel's back.
Mm. You know, that squirrel's really dark. Has dark coat.
What are you saying?
Just letting you know.
What? I didn't notice that. I don't know what you're talking about.
Wow. So yeah, if they still offer this now, what would be the
well? They offered it a couple of years
maximum
ago.
Price, and no one bought it. $1.4 million,
I think, was what it cost a few years ago.
If they offered it now, $1.5 million.
Yeah, it doesn't matter because it's not an amount of money that I have to spend on something like an airplane ticket.
You could sell every piece of property you own.
Maybe
get a loan.
Yeah,
and then live the rest of your life.
In the air?
In the air.
I don't think I don't like airports very much. Think of how sick you'd be all the time if you were in airports all the time. I feel like every time you go through an airport, you have a really high chance of getting sick just because you're exposed to a bunch of people from varied places.
It would just expand your domain as a person, your mental and your physical domain. Just like you wouldn't feel like you were a person of a city or town. You'd be a person of the world.
I don't really like the world very much, though. I'd much rather be a person in my living room. I'm with Gary on this. The awesome thing about that is that you'd have to leave the house too much. So who?
Well,
really
there
wants
is
that?
There is travel. There is. Yeah. It would be, you know, 30% of your life would be travel,
grueling.
Even if you lock that in with sleep. And I guess you also would have to overcome any fear of flying.
Well, I think after that point of period of time, you do greatly increase your chances of dying in an airplane.
If you're flying 200 times a year. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm not interested in that. It seems like a bad idea.
I would buy it in a heartbeat.
You would sell everything you own and
sell,
go
I would
into
sell
Hawk?
Every single thing I owned. And
would you buy a Vanagon and live in the Vanagon?
Well, probably buy a, you know, storage or something.
Okay.
Rent out storage. $1.5 million in a heartbeat. At this age. I don't know about you. But maybe that's another couple of years of travel.
Oh, I see. I see what you're saying.
Well, you know, it's a deal that doesn't really work if you only have like 20 years of travel left.
Yeah, I don't want to spend that much time on planes. I don't like spending that much time on planes. Let's take a break and talk about what we've been testing. So before we did the show, you got to try out the third person camera.
Yeah, we're going to be doing a video of this on Friday for next week. But this is the third-person camera rig that you've been building for Maker
Faire. It is a rig.
It is literally a rig.
Yeah.
And you talked about getting a backpack from REI.
Free.
Free backpack.
Thanks, REI.
It looks like a really old metal frame backpack that you use for backpacking, not an internal frame. I don't even know if they sell frame backpacks anymore.
The only thing I could find that has the right kind of external frame to do what I wanted to do was like a kid carrier. So it was either this backpack or a kid carrier because everything else is internal frame. And most of the internal frame stuff now has like carbon fiber. It's not even tubes anymore. It's just like sheets of carbon fiber that mold around.
But you just needed something that could fit a battery, cables, and that you could mount a monopod on.
Exactly. So this worked great. I used a bike stem, the stem thing, which is basically the thing that comes up out of the you know, attaches to the front wheel, and then you attach your handlebars to this thing. And so it ends up being just the right kind of joint for hanging off the bottom metal tube on the back and holding a monopod.
The best thing though is that the GoPro camera and the Sony visor work really well together.
Yeah, so you get 720p basically.
Really, really vibrant video quality.
Yeah.
And that video is recorded on an SD card.
Yes.
While you are seeing it live. Which is awesome for posting on YouTube.
Well, and the other nice thing is that because the GoPro, like the thing I found is that you whack the camera into stuff fairly regularly. Mm-hmm. So because the GoPro's in the shock housing, you're less likely to damage it than you would be if you're using
the Sony only
camera.
Has one input, right?
The Sony only has one input, so I can't do three. Like if I wanted to do 3D,
well, not 3D, but if you wanted to have like a backup cam.
if I wanted to have a backup cam, Chloe is trying to help Gary feel better. She's standing on him and licking his face.
I think this is working.
Chloe, get down. You can make her get down if you want, Gary. You don't have to put up with her.
Chloe's ready to breastfeed.
Gina, yeah.
Chloe's ready to breastfeed and licking Gary.
Right, exactly. She's building immunity.
Did you see that the new Time cover?
Yeah.
It's kind of relevant. Maybe wait till Gary's feeling a little better to talk about that.
Yeah.
But
the breastfeeding 10-year-olds.
No, 3-year-old.
6-year-olds.
Was the kid on the cover 6-year-old?
No, the kid on the cover was almost 4, I think.
I think it was a big kid or a small woman, but it
Twitter exploded.
The kid looked much older than three. It looked a little awkward.
Well, you know, he had to stand on a chair.
Yeah.
It was I thought it was a good picture. Gary's standing now. I hope he's feeling better.
Stretching a little bit.
Do you want some? There's some ginger ale in the kitchen if you want some.
No.
Okay. Gary's
So the backpack, the third person backpack, will have that at Maker Faire, do the whole video. I think it needs to be, the monopod needs to be more stable.
Yeah, I need to work out a better way to affix it. Right now what I'm using is a rubber foot that I cut a hole out of the bottom of. And the rubber foot is on the bottom of the monopod and kind of tucks into the spot on the bike stem.
Well, it just needs more wiring or rope or something to fix it, so you don't feel like it's going to fall down every time you try walking faster than, you know, 10 feet a minute.
Well, the thing I find is that you can't go too fast with it, so just because you'll wipe out.
But the experience is very surreal.
It's weird. It's unusual in my experience. It's something I've never experienced before, which doesn't happen that much anymore. So have that. We'll be there at Maker Faire and we'll show you how to build one of your own if you want to spend. It's going to end up being kind of expensive is the thing. It's going to be like $1,200 or $1,300 for the whole deal.
Use that Costco return policy.
Yeah, exactly. But there are cheaper ways to do it too. You don't have to do the high def camera. You don't have to do the high def goggles. You can use a much cheaper pair of goggles if you don't want to spend $800 or $900. Gary's back.
Yeah, I feel a bit better.
Good. I'm
just needed to lay down and close my eyes for a bit.
I don't like not feeling good, Gary. You know, well, I don't like to see
either.
You suffering.
The problem with laying down is that I actually started to drift off. I started to feel a bit sleepy, which is good. It's very salubrious, but I'm not a napper.
The dulcet tones of my voice.
I don't get people
put you off to sleep.
That can nap. And I guess everyone's physiology is different, but I'm very envious of people that can take 40 winks, nap for an hour, and wake up feeling refreshed. All that ever does for me is make me feel groggy and cranky.
Well, especially
I feel worse after I wake up from a nap. Yeah.
Yeah,
it throws off your whole cycle.
Yeah.
And there's a window too. Like after 4:30, that's my napping cutoff. If I take a nap after 4:30, I might as well just go to sleep.
It's most envious of cats. If I was ever to be a slave of an alien invasion.
There's a reason
they
call it a cat nap.
Yeah.
Oh, they just love find the sun. Patch of sun.
They just don't give a fuck. That's what I love about cats.
They're like the honey badgers of the pet world.
You know, the cats, the best position of a cat is upside down or rolling.
Yeah.
Really?
Rolling cats are endless.
Why rolling cat?
Because they don't usually roll.
I don't understand
what
you mean.
Very playful. When the cat lies on its back and starts rolling like a dog.
Oh, I've never seen that before.
Yeah, it's very peculiar.
You know, there was an astronaut.
By the way, Lucas Valley and Lucas Valley Road is not named after George Lucas and his family.
Really?
It's a coincidence. It's a previous Lucas from decades ago.
I'm so disappointed. A friend of mine who lives on Lucas Valley Road told me that.
I always thought it was, and people assume that because, you know, it seems obvious, but in fact, it's just a big coincidence.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah. But I do love that Lucas is trolling those NIMBYs by moving in a bunch of low-income people. It's like, how do you like me now?
Yeah. You want the movie studio back? Tough.
Because it is a bunch of fucking snobs up there in the North Bay.
Yeah. Gary hates North Bay people.
I like the North Bay.
Jeff and Ryan live in the North Bay, don't they?
Petaluma.
Yeah.
Which is a very nice town.
Yeah.
Is that still in the nice, super nice area, or is that like past?
No, Petaluma's.
But Jeff and Ryan aren't NIMBYs.
Yeah, no.
No, in fact, actually, Jeff and Ryan are the things the NIMBYs are usually
upset
about.
They're the people that move in next to the NIMBYs the NIMBYs get annoyed about. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
They're my Whole Foods.
Yeah, exactly.
This man wearing shorts and sneakers.
Ryan's outside picketing Whole Foods with a calzone, a microwave calzone.
Yeah, Ryan in the Whole Foods aisle asking them where the Cheez-Its are and like annoying everyone.
Yeah, do you guys have string cheese? I can't remember what we were talking about. The Lucas Valley thing.
No, that was, I don't know what,
Gary,
I've,
would you
I've
buy,
kind of thrown it all
would
off.
Would you pay $1 million? I know you don't like travel.
No, he doesn't like coming to, he doesn't like leaving his house.
But for,
is this the airline ticket thing?
The airline thing.
I think it's cool if you've got the kind of lifestyle, you'd have to be independently wealthy, I think, to be able to just pick up and go wherever you want. You got to remember there's also a lot of associated cost with traveling. It's not just the airfare.
Yeah, true, hotels cost, but I think.
Well, but not only that, it's like if you can't afford to not be at work for 2 weeks.
Well, I think if you did that, you just quit your job. You would find a job that would facilitate you traveling. Like if you want to,
I guess then you become a travel writer.
I think if you're spending that kind of money, you don't need a job. You're just independently wealthy.
Yeah. That's interesting to me.
It's interesting, though.
Oh, it's the kind of stuff that's fun to fantasize about.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the other thing is if you're like a retiree and if you're thinking maybe I'm going to buy a boat or a house, RV
it's
or something.
It's cheaper than leasing or getting a timeshare of a private jet.
Well, obviously. The fastest way to make a rich person poor is to invest in private jets. Mm-hmm. That's what I've always been told. Let's see. The Juice Orange. We did a quick look of this, I guess, last week now. Maybe it's – I never can remember when stuff's up anymore because we do 5 days worth of shooting in 1 or 2 days.
This is a solar power battery.
It's right behind you.
So I can show the camera.
It's underneath the Death Star. You don't say that every day.
Yeah. So this is a solar power battery about the size of
– a shoebox lid is what I said.
Yeah. I guess it's heavier than that. But it's the size of a tablet, a little thicker.
Yeah, so it has a solar charger.
Galaxy Tab 7.
It has a user-replaceable battery. It's waterproof, so you can leave it outside and you don't have to worry about it getting ruined or whatever. And it charges – it will fully charge the battery in about a day, about 10 hours. And that full charge will mostly power an iPad, a new iPad, the third generation.
Well, it's not full 40 watt-hours.
No, it's a 50 watt hour battery. So if you have it all the way charged, it will almost all the way charge because there's a little bit of lost along the way. It'll charge an iPhone twice, basically, which is pretty good. So if you do a lot of car camping, something like that, you don't always be plugged into the alternator of the car. This is a nice alternative, especially if you're someplace.
I think solar power is one of those things where I would not recommend buying solar powered gear now because I feel like we're on the verge of a solar power revolution.
We've been on the verge of a solar power revolution for 20 years now.
I'm going to wait till it's thin and light and batteries are better.
Thing isn't thick because of the batteries, because of the solar panel. This is thick because of the battery.
So I'm going to wait for solar panels to be more efficient and batteries to be smaller, lighter, and thinner before investing in a new solar power battery.
It is interesting because while I was working on the glasses, I did a lot of research into batteries and inverters and stuff like that. And there's not a lot of people making lithium ion batteries that are connected to inverters. Most of those inverters are connected to lead acid batteries, like you have in a car or a motorcycle. So they're really heavy because they're mostly water. And you get good energy density, just like you do in a car battery, but you don't, the weight is terrible. Like they're really heavy. So like the giant 13-pound battery I have working the third person camera, still only gives you 50 milliwatt hours. I can't remember. It's about the same as a laptop, as a big laptop battery, basically, which is a little bit of a bummer. So let's see. The Juice Orange is pretty cool, though. I thought it was as those things go, I've used a couple of them over the years. This one is definitely better than the one that I have. So yeah, if you are into that kind of thing and with camping season coming up, you might be. You can run your MP3 player or whatever while you're out
there. Yeah, because once you go out there into the grandeur of nature's wilderness, what you want to do is stare at your iPhone.
Yeah. You want to be able to watch Thor, Avengers, or whatever.
When you're on an airplane, do you pay for the in-flight Wi-Fi?
Yeah. Depends on how long the flight is.
See, it's not the same thing.
On a long flight, I have found that nothing collapses time like being able to use Wi-Fi.
Like here to Dulles, which is something I do fairly regularly to visit the parents.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's 5.5 hour flight.
That makes sense.
And that flight will shrink down to nothing.
Yeah. You look up and you're like, shit, I got to put my laptop up?
$15 for 5 hours of Wi-Fi makes sense. If it's a 2 hour flight, if it's here to Portland or maybe here to LA is 1 hour, 2 hours max, is that worth it? Do you really need.
No, it's
cheaper too. The shorter
flight. I think
flight.
anything less than 2 hours. Like if we fly from like here to LA or to Seattle or whatever, it's often not worth it because that's not that long a flight anyway. Yeah. You got to remember you don't get it for the whole flight.
Right.
There's a whole period like a
20 minutes on either end.
The 10,000 feet thing that it's not really. It's like 20 minutes before you can use it, and then 20 minutes is going to shut down again. So it's a very narrow window.
Yeah.
And you've also got to remember, well, that's not a big deal. The in-flight Wi-Fi is much like hotel Wi-Fi, that it's very heavily throttled. So you can get about streaming media or movies or anything, but it's good for like...
It's about reading text and...
Twitters and emails Twitter and web browsing. You can really eat up a lot of time with Wi-Fi.
I feel like it's more of a statement on how addicted we are to that internet. I found that coming back from Portland this recent trip, like I went on the internet Wi-Fi and I was like, okay, I used up all my Verizon 4G in Portland accidentally, my 1 gig per month.
How'd you do that?
Joey was uploading Dropbox and it was on my hotspot. And I was like, okay, I really want to pay $10 for 2 hours of Wi-Fi. I don't. You know why? I was happy. When you log into the Wi-Fi, you open your laptop or iPad, you get the landing page, like we were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. right? And they have access to an intranet with People magazine articles and like select media partners.
Gross.
And I found that fake internet gross. Intranet that I could browse for like 10-15 minutes
gross.
Was enough.
You know what this is? This is the equivalent of reading the back of the shampoo bottle when you're on the toilet.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
It's like it's not much, but at least it's something.
It gave me I could click a headline about Katy Perry or something.
Methyl sulfate.
Normally I wouldn't
care. Isn't that amazing that phenomenon that you will read anything? Like when you're on the can. Back of a bottle of shampoo is
fascinating.
Perfectly valid reading material. Yeah.
Anything to take my mind off the boring activity of just sitting there. It wasn't real Twitter. It wasn't real internet. I knew it wasn't.
This is grim.
But the five articles that they had from their select media partners and the local weather.
Just enough to tide you over.
Just enough.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the Virgin. It's like the Virgin TV. Like I never – like the number of times I've watched CNN in Virgin the last TV. 3 years are incredibly limited. But when you're sitting on the airplane and the seat back TV is in front of you.
It's the only time I've watched current TV.
I'll put headline news on or current news or whatever and watch that. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. Those in-flight TV channels are often a bit depressing. Like that's why Virgin America is great because you get real satellite TV.
Yeah.
But like if you're on United, where you're like NBC is their content partner, right? So you watch the NBC reel, mm-hmm. and you know you might get like a rerun of 30 Rock or something that's actually quite good. But there's also a lot of shit,
a lot of mid-season.
I can't remember which airline it was that I flew, but they'd chosen to do satellite TV instead of wireless internet, right? Like, because there's two things, they weigh about the same. They have to put the seat backs in for the TV.
Yeah.
I was watching TV as we were getting ready to take off. It's like, TV's pretty good, right? This is better than nothing. And we get up to altitude and it says, okay, the complimentary portion of the TV service is gone now. Where maybe it was JetBlue. If you want to continue watching TV, you've got to pay, $4 or whatever it was. I was like, why in the hell would anybody ever pay money to watch TV? I mean, I pay a lot of money for cable every month, I realize. But on the airplane, anything I can do on the airplane would be better than watching TV, assuming I hadn't made some sort of horrible miscalculation and not brought a book or a magazine or a phone or an iPad or anything else to entertain myself than watch headline news.
You never want to be at the mercy of whatever the airline is going to give you. The same as for the same reason – eat a decent meal before you get on, a 2 or 3 hour flight, because you don't want to be stuck with whatever garbage they're offering you.
And Louis C.K. did a bit about this, where who eats at the landing portion? Like when you land from a flight, no one eats.
I sometimes stop on the way out.
Really? Well, it depends what's there.
Pinkberry. I'll stop for Pinkberry
like
when I
was flying to Philadelphia a lot last year, you walk out of the gate at Philadelphia Airport, the first thing you see is a Dunkin' Donuts. And that's
Cinnabon
my first port of call.
Well, the other thing is sometimes if depending on which way you're going,
you
can arrive someplace
premium?
Really late, and the only food that there will be open when you get where you're going is going to be in the airport.
Let me tell you, I got to take Dunkin' Donuts off my Facebook. I got to unlike them because they taunt me with all the shit that I can't have in the Bay Area because there's no Dunkin' Donuts out here.
Yeah.
Like they have a new Men in Black 3 promotional tie-in combo. You get two different donuts and like a coffee. But it looks so good.
I heard Men in Black 3 was coming out.
That's one of the ways in which you know is through these kind of promotional tie-ins.
I have other ways that I know.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you would know.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with stopping on the way out.
No. Nope.
Like in the old days,
airport premium, nope.
when airport food was Cinnabon and
Cinnabon
a bad taco
and Subway
stand.
And a bad taco stand.
But why is it, as much as I love Louis C.K., why is it that weird? Oftentimes
it's expensive.
Yeah, I know, but oftentimes on a plane, you're stuck there, you're hungry, there's either no food service or you don't want to pay $8 for a bag of Doritos or whatever, so you're going to eat if you can't get off a plane starving, the first thing you do is jump on something at the airport. Why is that so crazy?
There's usually restaurants outside the airport.
That's an extra hour by the time you get a cab or a shuttle or something into the city. You're just going to eat what's there.
This is the reason to pack smart when you go take a flight and have.
Well, it depends on the quality of the airport. Terminal 2 at SFO is legit. Like they have some great stuff there.
Yeah, you can get some blue bottle coffee, get a little Pinkberry.
Get a Pinkberry.
Get a breakfast burrito.
We did.
No, but that's all resolved now. They cut all the ties with that dude.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
What happened?
We can have Pinkberry again.
The guy that found Pinkberry,
who allegedly beat up a homeless dude with a tire iron.
You know when you say allegedly? It's much like saying It's like the LD thing, right?
We say, the sarcastic allegedly.
Now having said that, yeah. It's like the now having said that.
No offense, but
yeah.
So we can have pink beer again. But remember, that was what made that trip so great when we came back, thing that was there was that he's like, oh, pink berry.
You know, I love that the question they ask you at the pink berry. The very first question, is this your first time at a Pinkberry? Because they want to introduce you to the experience.
Well, are you the one that doesn't get toppings at Pinkberry?
I don't get toppings.
The fuck is wrong with you?
Because I like the purity of the
frozen. There's nothing wrong with that, but I like my toppings.
Yogurt.
That PB&J Pinkberry, so good.
The one that we got that time with the crepes and the chocolate and the brownie
pieces
and the peanut butter.
And I've never seen that topping at any other froyo place.
Great pieces.
Yeah, I like.
They also have the best dispensing machines. When they make the cup of froyo, it is the neatest.
Do you prefer the Pinkberry system where they make it for you and then hand it to you? Because at most other froyo, that's kind of an outlier. At most other froyo places, they'll let you put your own toppings on.
I don't get the toppings.
I like them to control it.
I
don't want other people handling
the toppings. If they are froyo artists, then let them do their work.
No. For me, it's like a salad bar. You don't want to go someplace and eat where every other chud that goes through there is manhandling the toppings.
I guess there's that.
Right? I mean, that's the thing for me. I like having it's like Subway. I'd much rather have a Subway than a do-it-yourself sandwich bar.
Oh, and you know that summer's coming back around, because the flavors at Pinkberry are seasonal. I wonder if that coconut flavor's coming back that I like so much.
You know, there's one in Danville. I'd make the run over there if you want some weekend.
I've been to that one.
If you had
or maybe it was in
flight.
Palo Alto.
Palo Alto's I didn't know there was one in Palo Alto.
Yeah.
If you had the unlimited flight, the Golden Pass, you get the airport experience, the Pinkberry at the airport, and you can fly anywhere.
Oh, you could just book a ticket out of SFO.
Just not get
and
on
go
the
to Terminal 2 and not get on
and
the plane.
And also, because you have first class, you can skip all the lines.
Oh, my God.
And you want everything to check in. Bring slippers.
That's a very expensive Pinkberry.
I just have a place there that holds slippers for me.
I think the one in Palo Alto is the closest one other than that. And we have made that dedicated trip before.
After Norm and I did the Amazing Race tryouts last year in Danville, I went to the Pinkberry over there, and it was pretty nice.
In retrospect, that was a very long
I'm so glad that whole thing got sorted out, because now I can have Pinkberry again.
I was having Pinkberry the whole time.
Were you?
About that, and I just saying it.
I know.
Wow.
The guild is the lead.
The last time I had Pinkberry was
no honor system with
that.
Norm. Good to know for any future.
Probably on the way back.
I wasn't promoting Pinkberry.
We know how Norm is.
No, you were just giving them your money.
Yeah.
Okay.
We saw the Avengers last weekend.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Loved every minute of it.
It's nice to see Joss get a win occasionally.
I agree.
Anybody, we want to talk about that? You did a live stream
I've said everything I've wanted to say about the Avengers already.
Yeah, I don't think we need to go into a lot of depth, but it really, it lived up to the hype. It was...
We went to the Japantown Theater, which I hadn't been to, and I'd never been to the balcony before.
I did want to say is, because I had seen it in 2D, fake IMAX Century XD, digital 2K, and also Dolby 3D.
Okay.
The Dolby 3D experience was the best experience. The glasses.
They have the best
brightness.
Glasses.
I got to tell you, as Norm will tell you, I had a lot of 3D angst. At the last minute, I was considering bailing.
I got that text
see it in
the
3D.
Morning.
Because I really wanted to see this movie, and I didn't want the first time out to be in any way like a gimped version, which 3D could be. But, apart from a last-minute panic I had when one of the lenses in my glasses popped out, and I had to very quickly rush back to the foyer to get a replacement pair before the movie started, I got to tell you, I didn't think the 3D was that bad.
I thought the 3D was pretty well done. There was only one place that there was weird parallax.
The only thing that bugs me is, because everyone does this, occasionally you peer over the glasses just to see what it looks like without them, and you realize how much brighter the image is.
Yeah.
Like, it's not distractingly dim through the glasses.
It's definitely
but
dim.
You look over and you go, oh, wow, this gives you so much brighter. So when we go back... Leah hasn't seen it yet. We're going to go. I'll take her to see it. We'll see the 2D version.
Yeah, I don't think you lose. I don't think you gain anything by 3D.
Movie. It's kind of a push. The only thing you lose is an extra $5.
Yeah. I like that's where I'm at. And with the exception of maybe Hugo, which I thought the 3D was really well done and kind of integral to the experience.
Yeah.
I don't ever miss maybe Tron.
It also makes
3D.
The frame look smaller.
Just a little bit.
But like 30 minutes in, I kind of forgot that it was in 3D.
Yeah.
Well, aside from having to push up the glasses.
Every now and again, it's, and it's particularly annoying, like us, you have to wear the glasses over your own.
Yeah, the exhibit glasses.
And I don't like those Dolby glasses that we got where the lenses are really small.
Oh,
I like kind of the comically big ones.
Well, you like the IMAX ones.
You don't see the edge.
Yeah, right. Those are
the
those
IMAX
are
ones, which are like the hipster ones.
Yeah. Well, like when we went to see Transformers, remember we had those ridiculously oversized. I prefer those to the Dolby ones where you kind of feel like you can... There's a frame around your vision. I don't like that.
I think the picture is better with the Dolby ones, though. I think
maybe so, because I actually, like I said, I thought the 3D was good. It was subtle enough that it didn't feel in your face, but you could tell there was a 3D effect. And like, yeah. Halfway through, I forgot it was even in 3D. I was just enjoying the movie.
Yeah. That's kind of the way I felt.
Did I tell you about the time last week when I went to a press briefing and I was talking to a PR guy and we both realized that we had the exact same glasses?
That had to be awkward.
At the same time.
At least it was a guy.
Yeah, and he complimented me on the Cosmonaut. First, he asked me about the Cosmonaut pen because I was taking notes with the iPad. And then halfway through the briefing, it was a one-on-one briefing, I was like, oh, this is very strange. Dude is my exact same. I could tell from the inner nose bridge was translucent, which is for my glasses. And
you buy your glasses from a...
I buy them online for $99.
Yeah.
Plastic glasses.
From a hipster glass place.
Yes.
That's definitely a hipster awkward moment, right?
Yeah.
Fashion faux pas.
Yeah. I mean, the worst thing you can do is wear the same clothes as
someone
else.
My Fair Lady. Going to the horse races.
Poor Eliza.
Same dress.
Poor Eliza. Let's see. Gary, you've been testing some As Seen on TV product, I believe.
I haven't actually tested it yet, but it has shown up.
I bought these. This is the InstaHang you're talking about.
Yeah, it's called an InstaHang. And basically what it is like a staple gun for picture hooks that you can just bang them straight into the wall.
When you were testing something called InstaHang, I immediately thought, is this like a new Instagram app?
Yeah, because it's Instacast, yeah. Instagram, Instapaper, now InstaHang.
Yeah, it's a Hangout thing.
Is it like Hangman meets Draw Something?
Google Hangouts with Instagram.
Yeah.
There you go. But now, I tested those hooks, the ones that look like
the ones that you kind of push into the wall and twist?
Just push and twist.
They're supposed to be super strong.
They were real bad. That wasn't a good product at all.
I kind of feel like there's very, very few products, and I'm a sucker for these. It's been a while since I actually saw something on TV. Oh, by the way, and this is the other thing now. This is really annoying. So I'm laying in bed on a Sunday morning, watching Meet the Press or whatever, and the InstaHang commercial comes on. And it's very – I haven't done this in a long, long time, but I'm like, I have to order that immediately.
No.
Like, while the commercial is on, I'm dialing the number.
What was the last thing you did before InstaHang?
I think it might have been those potato peeling gloves were awful.
Oh. Hey, we tested those.
Remember those?
Norm peeled carrots with them.
He did the two fists.
They're terrible. They're awful.
But you felt like that was the most compelling thing? Like you had to buy that?
No, the last thing was the Orgrenic pan, which actually is pretty good. It's basically not like a particularly kind of nice pan.
Didn't you buy the Snuggie suit?
No. That was you, dude.
I distinctly remember
Gary being bummed about the color.
You being bummed that they were back-ordered when you tried to order the Snuggie suit.
Yeah.
What was that thing called?
I tried to order it. You actually had them.
It took six months for that fucking thing to come.
The Forever Lazy. We do have Snuggies in the house.
I have a Slanket. That's the real Snuggie.
That's the good one.
So uncomfortable.
We have the luxury Snuggie.
Yeah, the thing is it takes so long to get situated with the Slanket that by the time you are, you just don't want to move.
I agree.
So it's hard to be that level of lazy.
Here's what bugged me about InstaHang is usually when you call one of these As Seen on TV order numbers.
I've never called
you
that
call
before.
Them?
Just give me a second.
Norm is upset.
I called them, and usually when you call these people, you get a very nice person that wants to, you know, there's a whole bunch of like, I don't want the upsell. No, I don't want to buy six extra things. No, I don't want this. No, I don't want that. There's a whole thing. What you get now is you get robots.
No.
Oh, yeah. So, really? I understand when robots call me, but like if I'm going out of my way to call you because I want to buy a product and you give me a fucking robot, I just put the phone down immediately. So, because I find being made to talk to robots humiliating and dehumanizing, so I won't do it. I put the phone down and I went to instahang.com instead and ordered that.
I would imagine.
And it's a very long process because even after you've ordered it, you have to click through so many upsells. No, I don't want this. Yeah. No, I don't want that. No, don't sign me up for these bullshit coupons.
I bought a fair number of products from those because all those As Seen on TV sites use more or less the same template. I think there's like two or three services that kind of funnel innovators into
the manufacturing
process.
That's why the store, there is no upsell.
Yeah.
I did three sign-up processes this week that were notable. One was an As Seen on TV, like purchasing something from them. That was bad, right? Worse, I went to the DMV to upgrade my driver's – to renew my driver's license.
Oh, my goodness.
The online DMV renewal in California, awesome. I made an account. I put in my driver's license number. It said, hey, is this your current address? I said, no, I've moved. It said, okay, we'll send you a new driver's license out in the next 30 days.
But do you not need to update your photo?
No. Well, I mean, I should because I don't have a beard and don't have glasses.
I think is I kind of want to update mine because mine is from when I was really fat.
But the thing about...
But in order to do that, I'm going to have to go to the DMV. So maybe I'll just live with the fat picture.
That's the thing is I'll take the beardless, glassesless 26-year-old Will Smith photo over having to go back to the fucking
DMV. Yeah, because DMV really is kind of a hell mouth. It's better if you've made an appointment, you can get in and out more quickly. But yeah, if you can just do it online.
The problem I have with the DMV, even if you make the appointment, is you still have to fight the parking lot to get a space.
Yes.
Like that one on Fell, I literally almost came to blows with someone at one point because the experience,
it's not pleasant.
It's real bad.
It's good when you can do it just online. Because my renewal is coming up soon, so I got to do mine.
So the DMV experience was the best of the three, right? The As Seen on TV was the middle one. The worst was signing up for Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's well known.
Oh.
What a bullshit system that is. Although,
it's worse because they don't want
I actually got through relatively quickly and got my pro pass. Although I don't think I'm going to be able to go this year.
No. I'm sorry.
It's right on the due date.
Oh, it's the due. Yeah.
It ain't going to happen. So our due date is July 4th. And typically for first time around, you go 8 days late.
Yeah.
So that puts it July 12th. And that's right in the bullseye. So yeah. I don't think Comic-Con's going to happen.
You don't want to miss the birth of your first child.
Maybe. I mean, and it's, I don't know. I've got to try and, well, I'm, I,
you so, can take I'm, Leah down I with
obviously,
you though.
Obviously, if it's the baby hasn't been born yet, there's no way I'm going anywhere.
Yeah.
If it has been born, then the only way I could go to, because I may or may not have something to announce there.
Ah.
But even if that were to happen, I would have to be in and out in a day. Yeah. So I don't think it's going to happen.
Hmm. Is there going to be a panel for the night movie?
I don't know.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm sure that.
I apologize for asking. I realized I was making a mistake the moment I started.
And I'm not being coy. I honestly don't know.
No, I know.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I know. You're okay. I tested the TiVo. I tested the TiVo Xfinity app. So TiVo has been advertising. I don't know if you've seen. There's been billboards and everything lately where they're advertising that now you can run the Xfinity on-demand stuff on your TiVo, which is new.
Oh, can I complain about something real quick?
Yeah, please.
Comcast.
Yeah.
Xfinity.
Hard to believe.
What a load of shit. So I have a data usage meter.
Uh-huh.
When you go onto your Xfinity webpage, there's a thing.
Really?
I have a 250 gigabyte cap, right? And you're not supposed to go over it. I don't know what happens if you do, but I want to avoid that.
They send you a nasty letter.
And you can go onto the website and see how much you've used, which will tell you if you know, where you are. It's useful to know, right?
Yeah.
And since I've been streaming a lot of video off Amazon Prime recently, because I'm working my way back through the whole run of NYPD Blue, which is one of my favorite shows,
yeah,
I'm a little bit concerned that I may be using a lot of data I don't want to go over. Go onto the website. The data meter's not there. Can't figure out why. So I talked to Comcast Bill. He sets someone up to give me a call.
He's a nice guy, Comcast.
They tell me that the reason why the data meter disappeared off my website when I try to look at my accounts and settings is that because I have an Xbox 360 – that's the reason. And I said, I don't think that could, you know what? I don't even want to, it's so fucking ridiculous.
So you can't track now?
I can't track how much.
Because
I have an Xbox 360.
Here's why. The reason they do that is that the Xbox 360, Gruber wrote something about this a couple of weeks ago. The net neutrality is complete horse shit in this case, because what happens is they track data usage for HBO Go, which is content that you get access through your cable subscription.
Right.
They track usage through Hulu on Xbox and PS3 and whatever.
Right.
They don't track usage through the Xfinity app on Xbox.
And that's good to know, actually, because I can now use that with impunity. But why can't they just set that aside and tell me what else I'm using?
Because I don't think that their tracking tool is smart enough to differentiate traffic from the individual apps.
So that must be why. That's just
nonsense.
It's
still dumb.
That is nonsense.
I just track on the router. So I put a router that uses DDWRT in
there. I wait until I get the nasty letter.
That's the other way to handle it.
Have you ever got one of those?
Never gotten the nasty letter.
You have a lot
of people. And I know some of those people living there are pirating. I know.
Okay.
So
now I'm having to do the math in my head. Like, okay, so like how much data is, say, an HD episode? What's that?
Forgiveness, not permission.
I know, but I don't even want to get the nasty letter.
Don't even think about it. Don't even worry
about it. The secret is that
if you get the nasty letter, you threaten to quit. You threaten to leave their service.
Well, the other thing is if you get the nasty letter and you want to keep Comcast, all you do is you pay the extra $40 a month or whatever for business.
No.
And then there's no cap.
No.
Maybe. No,
if you go to business class. And also they don't throttle you
down. It's kind of worth, because I love not having to worry about it.
Yeah. Anxiety is your enemy.
Don't.
It really
don't.
Is.
Gary, there is no cap. Go about your life. Stream your
Amazon. I mean, that's how I'm trying to live my life right now.
Yeah. No anxiety.
Without limits.
Limitless. The awesome pill. Take this pill.
Oh, man. I wish I had one of those pills.
Download without impugning.
So I set up the Xfinity app on TiVo the other day because I wanted to see what on demand was like because I've never had on demand.
Mm.
And when you press the button to open the Xfinity app, it says, "Are you sure you want to do this?" Because when you flip this on, it's going to stop recording anything on your TiVo. Like, so if you're in the middle of recording a show and you go to the on demand menu on the TiVo, it stops recording what you're recording.
That doesn't sound very good.
No, it's fucking useless. It's completely
asinine.
What's
the point of having it then?
I think they wanted to have some billboards for TiVo. Anytime
you want to watch on-demand content, it cannot be recorded.
Nope.
See, I like TiVo, but I'm just not. There's always a compromise, and that's a stupid compromise.
Well, but I mean, now you don't kind of need the on-demand anymore because it's on the Xbox. Just
well, that's
the same
so
thing,
that's so. That's the thing, and so for that reason, I think I may be looking to make that TiVo switch, but I'm still waiting to know that like the cable card stuff is perfectly okay.
The cable card stuff is fine at this point. I haven't had any problems at all with cable card.
Yeah, maybe I'll make that switch because I hate that Comcast box. It's so bad.
And you can get a TiVo that'll record four things at once, which is really nice. I mean, that's a lot of stuff to record.
I don't think I've ever had. Every now and again, there's a conflict, like on like a Sunday night type thing when there's like four things on at once. Every now and again, but it's so rare.
The thing
that
is,
happens.
It's never four. It's always like two, and then you have to make a tough choice.
I just watch it on demand now. Like half the stuff that I watch, you just find it in the on demand.
HBO Go is immediate.
Yeah.
Should we take a question?
Sure.
Emails?
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails.
Yeah, we don't do emails. We do
emails.
No.
Questions.
Boom.
Hey, Tested. This is Leo from Estacada, Oregon. First, some hometown trivia. Will would actually hate it in Estacada because our main export is Christmas trees.
Boo.
Now for my question. This summer, I'm going to be moving up into eastern Oregon, and my internet access is going to be severely limited. I'm going to have a very strict download limit per day, and I was wondering if you knew of any utilities that could help me keep track of my downloads or even throttle my speed if I started getting too high. Thanks, I love the show, and keep doing what you do.
So I don't know of any utilities that do that on a per machine basis, but the thing I would do is do DDWRT, and then it'll track everything in and everything out of your router every day. And you can just check when you start getting close. There may even be utilities that'll like put a little desktop prompt up for you on your daily usage. But
I want to be like maybe ThinkGeek can provide some kind of like DEFCON counter that you can put above your and it will
like a war room type
as
thing?
You get closer to your data cap, it'll start.
I want a giant analog or not digital or LCD clock, like one of those.
They sell those at ThinkGeek.
I want one that's programmable.
You can get a display that you can put anything you want on using a piece of software.
I want that. Yeah.
That sounds pretty cool.
Mm.
So yeah,
you know, we missed out on the router. Portal gun. I completely
they sold
missed
the portal
out.
Gun?
The ones that they actually mass produced in boxes?
Yeah. So NECA, NECA is the toy company that got the license from Valve to make the working portal gun. I think it was like $120 or something.
Well, not a working portal.
Well, I mean, it lights up and
right.
There it takes
back. You're saying it doesn't tear the fabric of space and time?
I saw pallets of them and I thought like there was going to be, but
yeah,
you can't get them?
They only made limited quantities and they
did you ever even finish
months.
Portal 2? Chan?
I'm regardless.
Chan?
These are things that
no,
you
no,
like.
No, no, no. Everybody here who's finished Portal 2
there
say
potatoes
yes.
And shit.
Yes.
Right?
Did you finish potatoes. Portal 2, Gary?
I did.
Potatoes. Hey, I finished Portal 2.
Potatoes.
Did you finish Portal 2, Norm?
As long as there are no follow-up questions.
What happens?
Wait, no.
I think it's safe to talk about spoilers. Do you remember that? Let's talk about that. The joke at the end of Portal 2 is one of my all-time favorite things.
It's a good joke. I agree with your point. I think if you didn't finish the game, you can't really claim to be a true fan.
I'm just saying, for you, Gary, I was supposed to let you know when they were going to sell that portal gun, and they sold out.
So you fucked up.
Yes. Way to go, Chan. You failed twice in one conversation.
Good job.
DDWRT is the answer.
How many of those did they make?
Couple hundred only, apparently.
Oh, shit.
Way to answer that question for our Eastern Portland listener. I've been to Eastern Portland. Have you ever been to Eastern Oregon?
I've driven through Oregon.
Have you been to the east part of like Pendleton and all that stuff?
No.
There's an Oregon Trail Museum.
Oh.
That is fascinating.
That's great. The only two pieces of Oregon trivia that I know from when I drove through there one time is that I was told don't tell anyone that you're from California.
No.
Because they don't like that.
They don't like Californians?
They don't want us there.
Why?
Because we've shit up the state. Oregon? That's why nobody likes Bend. It's all full of Californians now.
Really?
Yeah, but not well liked there.
Huh.
And then the other thing is that it's kind of weird the first time you experience is you cannot pump your own gas.
Yes.
I got called out every time.
We got to fill up. You step out of the car. That guy ran over.
Oh, yeah.
No. Gas. You can't do that. It's my job.
No gassies.
And was like, I've already started.
I put my card in. I put my own card in. No,
they have to do it for you. Yeah.
It's built into the price.
I thought that was very interesting. It wasn't that much more expensive than here, even. But yeah, I like Oregon. Everybody's very affable. It's like South Canada.
Right.
Very friendly. So yeah, DWRT. Get a router that supports it. I like the Asus RTN16U. It's about $80 on Amazon, and if you put the right software in there, it will track the amount of data that passes for you,
which is okay, an important good.
Thing to know. And that will do it. Oh, of course, if you have a question for us, the email address is podcast@tested.com. Keep it under 45 seconds. Listen to it to make sure it sounds okay. We're not getting that many questions right now, so if you have – this is a good time to get your question in. If you want to send us some hometown trivia or a would you rather, we're always down for that too. And that'll do it for us this week. Thank you, Gary Whitta. I hope you're feeling better. Thanks for coming down. Norma Chan, always a pleasure to see you, sir. We'll be back with more Tested next Thursday and every day on the web at tested.com. Till later, I'm Will. Today's outro theme is brought to us by KJN. Again, it features Gary. And there'll be fake outtakes.
Oh,
in just
is this a new one?
It's a new one every week.
Fantastic.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
Tested.
That was the modem sound.
Yeah.
It was the modem sounds. Did we do that one already?
Nope. You know, they finished shooting Star Trek, the sequel, just 2 days ago.
I heard about
it. I thought they had San Francisco stuff still to do.
No, they shot all their San Francisco stuff over the weekend. They were here for Cinco de Mayo at the Hooters.
Really?
Zachary Quinto, Benedict Cumberbatch from Sherlock. Have you seen Sherlock yet, Gary?
Yes, of course.
He plays the villain in the Star Trek movie. Well, I know you've seen it.
It's not Khan. I know that.
And Simon Pegg and Chris Pine were in San Francisco.
At the Hooters?
I didn't even know we had Hooters. I don't know which one, though. I don't know if it was
the
downtown
stuff, the Academy stuff?
I don't know. But they were in Northern California for Cinco de Mayo. They were Twitter pics of them. It might have even been the one at 380 in San
Bruno. I didn't even know we had a Hooters.
We have the one in San Bruno. We have two.
The only one I know about is the one down by Fisherman's Wharf.
I think that's the one they were
Hooters
at.
Hooters is dramatically overrated.
But then they were cruising along Broadway by our old office at 3 a.m. So if my life choice was to hang out Hooters all the time, I could have hung out with...
If I had just finished shooting a Star Trek film, I'd probably go to Hooters.
Why
not?
Really?
Yeah, why not?
I don't Hooters talks about the wings being awesome, but it's not good.
They're not good. The food is not good.
People know about them.
Yeah, you're going there for orange shorts,
and it is a bit depressing.
Yeah, it's not. I don't know. It's not my favorite thing.
Yeah,
there's much better places to get wings.
Many.
Oh yeah,
better places.
Those wings that you get out from the Sunset are high on my list. Although they're not really buffalo wings.
They're not buffalo wings,
but they're delicious wings.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever had truly great buffalo wings.
We should go to that place in the Russian River sometime. They have fantastic wings there.
Okay.
Russian River Pub. It was on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Do you prefer ranch or blue cheese on your wings?
I like to have both so I can alternate.
I like to go back. I can never choose. I always like give me a bit of each.
Is there a dressing that's both ranch and blue cheese?
Good blue cheese ranch.
I guess if you could mix them together, I don't know what that would be like.
It's not.
You know,
I didn't realize
Miracle Whip is considered a dressing.
It's mayonnaise, but
I know
stuff.
It's mayo. It's vinegar and mayo.
Yeah,
as a mayo like.
I find Miracle Whip offensive.
It is, but it's listed as a salad dressing.
You can put mayonnaise on salads. It's, but a lot of if you. Think
but I'm very impressed by the Miracle Whip logo.
Why?
Have you seen their logo?
Oh, they do a new logo?
Their redesign is M and W connected, so the M and the W are the same thing inverted, but. It's on a piece of bread, and it looks like it's the Miracle Whip being squirted on a piece of bread.
I'd be curious to know what the Miracle Whip market share is versus mayonnaise.
That's a terrible logo.
It's a great logo. It's so clever. It's a visual pun.
It's a
Ollie Moss could have designed that.
I kind of like it. Yeah, I think they're trying to reposition Miracle Whip, and they're doing it in that kind of like, you know, don't dismiss it.
Yeah, because
there's a very negative public perception about Miracle Whip, which they're trying to...
Yeah, it's for people with bad taste.
It's like, well, it's like if you see the most recent episode of Mad Men, where they're doing this with Cool Whip. It was just taste it.
Yeah.
Yeah, give it a try.
That's my favorite.
They understand they've got a product where the public perception is like, generally people think it's not good.
That's my favorite part about Mad Men is it's basically a history of advertising for 1961 through, however far along.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And with products like this, I've tried Miracle Whip. It's okay. It tastes like just kind of slightly more tart mayonnaise.
It's tangy mayonnaise.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
I don't like mayonnaise, period.
I'd just rather have real mayonnaise.
Always hold the mayo.
Yeah, well, but some people like it.
Mayonnaise is delicious.
Eggs and oil blended.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly it.
Yeah, emulsified oil.
You know, you should make your own mayonnaise.
You can. If you watch it on TV when they sell blenders and stuff or the mixers.
The easiest way to do it is in the food processor.
Oh, the food processor, yeah. They always show making mayonnaise.
The great Alton Brown did a whole Good Eats about
mayonnaise
and how to make your own, which is very interesting. Because again, most mayos that you look at, there are many, many ingredients in the
shitload of chemicals.
But you want to make your if you want truly, you know, natural mayonnaise, you kind of have to make your own.
Is it good as a lubricant, or is it just like tasty?
Lubricant?
Well, it's mixed food, easier to swallow.
Moistening the food, you mean?
Yes.
It's not sandwich food. Lube.
That's what mayo is.
That's the name of this show.
But the thing that I found amazing about it at the end, I remember for some reason this is the episode of Good Eats that really stuck with me, is after he made the mayo, he said, and the great thing about mayo is you can very easily turn it into all kinds of other things. Like add a little bit of this, and now it's tartar sauce.
Oh, yeah.
Add a little bit of this, and now it's like hollandaise. But I was like, oh, wow, I had no idea. That
pickle, relish, and cocktail sauce.
Yeah,
Thousand Island.
Yeah, Thousand Island is ketchup and pickle relish.
Like Thousand Island and you know, like the secret sauce that you get at like In-N-Out or McDonald's or whatever.
Yep.
I inadvertently tried mixing ketchup and mayonnaise together to make like a pink sauce to see what happened. It's actually very close to that. That's kind of what you get, and it was really good.
That's what Big Mac sauce is basically Thousand Island dressing plus mayonnaise.
Yeah.
I really like little mayonnaise and mustard. Like, there's this stuff that you could get in the South called Durkee.
Well, when you make like tuna,
like,
you want to put mustard in that.
Well, you put a little bit of mustard, or mustard powder. Powder is good.
What do you put on a hot dog?
I have many different hot dogs. I like to eat hot dogs in many different ways.
Well, what's your go-to?
The go-to is probably like chili and onions and mustard.
Oh, wow, it's fancy.
That is quite fancy.
Well, if I'm getting it out, if I'm making it at home, it's going to be, you know, relish and mustard.
I don't like relish and I don't like kraut.
I usually just
put ketchup on it.
Ketchup
maybe mustard if I'm feeling adventurous.
Ketchup's my least favorite condiment.
Wow.
It's pickled tomatoes. I totally buy that at this point, Will.
Well, no, it's...
That totally fits
your
profile.
What about fancy ketchup?
I'm not a huge fan of ketchup because it's a shitload of calories and it doesn't add that much.
Oh, I disagree.
What? No way. Yeah.
It covers up the flavor of whatever it is you're
eating. The difference between a pile of French fries and a pile of French fries with ketchup,
that's
a big fucking difference.
Agreed. French fries are for ketchup. Ketchup is for French fries. You don't put ketchup on a sandwich, though. You never put ketchup on a hot dog.
A hot dog.
No. The one thing I've never seen anyone do, because it's kind of crazy, like who would eat a dry hot dog with nothing on it? That's madness.
Hot dog with bun with nothing.
Speed eaters, right?
That's a whole other thing.
That's not for taste. The trick to putting ketchup on a hot dog is you put the ketchup on and then you rotate the dog.
Oh, that's very fancy.
That is a pro tip right there.
Or you open up the bun a little bit because you got to have the good grip on the bun.
Do you toast the bun?
Yeah, of course.
I prefer a toasted bun.
A classy person toasts the bun. But you squeeze the ketchup on.
As he's eating his hot dog.
And then you rotate the dog so it gets...
So it's fully slathered.
Yes. And then you can put more sauce on it and then rotate it the other way.
Do you like spicy mustard or yellow mustard on a hot dog?
It depends on – I like all kinds. We have a lot of kinds of mustard in the house depending on the occasion.
Well, that was always
– like that spicy brown porter, Sierra Nevada mustard.
Yeah,
I think that may be my favorite. The only kind of mustard I really don't like is just like plain old yellow like French's hot dog mustard, American mustard.
But see, that's the right mustard for the chili dog, I think.
That to me is like eating Hershey's chocolate. Like if you're going to eat chocolate, eat good stuff.
Yeah, fair enough. Grey Poupon is a good go-to.
You ever had real English mustard? That stuff is fucking crazy.
The light you up stuff? The spicy stuff?
Well, I'm just saying, any kind of English mustard is going to be really, really hot.
Yeah, yeah.
The only stuff hotter than that, in my experience, is like when you get into like Chinese mustard, which or is Brazilian. Just mad, crazy madness.
That's
mustard.
Just horseradish.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. No, I like a good hot dog.
My favorite hot dog, the one you get from the cart down downtown here in the city in Union Square, where they give you the spicy onion relish. That's yeah. good stuff.
You know, there's a by the place I get my haircut. There's a what's up dog, which is usually really bad, but this one happens to be good because the dudes who work there are pretty awesome.
Yeah,
and they do the spicy onion pickled peppers and all that stuff mix. That's fantastic.
But if you want to get if you're gonna get a hot dog type sandwich, you want to get it from a sausage place.
No, well, sausages and hot dogs are different things.
My favorite hot dogs are always the ones that come off the cart.
The cart when they sit in the boiling water for a long time.
Yeah,
it's
I like
good stuff.
I like that.
Yeah,
and the really long, thin. They're harder to find here, but the really long, thin New York style ones. Yeah,
yeah.
That protrude from either side of the bun.
Now, if you have the choice,
you never want extra bun.
No.
Extra bun is the curse. I mean, if you go to Costco and you get buns and they're too big for like the sausages you buy, that's the worst. You tear off the ends.
Now I want hot dogs.
I've never wanted a hot dog in my life more. Also, I haven't had lunch yet either. So this is dark times.
You're in that familiar place.
But best hot dog you've ever had?
There may have been some kind of placebo effect going on here, but I think my favorite one, the one that always stands out, is the first time I was in New York, I got one from a cart in Times Square. And I was like, yeah, this is a really
serious business.
Yeah. Cause it was super, super long.
Yeah.
You know how like those really massive floppy New York size style pizza slices that you have to kind of fold up. I've never seen that anywhere outside of New York City.
Well,
I don't know where you would get that. I don't know. Where would you go for
pizza
that?
Pizza place in Cosmo. That's, yeah. They have that kind of pizza.
You have to fold those.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Well, I mean, we'll have to have you guys down for pizza sometime because Gina and I have gotten the crust right so that we can do real thin.
I like the thinner crisp. The crust, the better. I'm on record about this. I don't like the big fat pie crust.
My favorite hot dog is Game Dog. Like the first time I went to a football game at University of Tennessee, you go out and like the kids are walking there with the coolers and they'll huck the hot dog at you like for $2. Stadium dog goes a long way.
I like and you match that up with the garlic fries you get here at
well that's a whole different thing.
Giants ballpark. Yeah. That's a pretty fantastic combo.
It's a nice experience.
Yeah, I don't like chili dogs though. I like cheese dogs. But chili dogs always get too messy. It's just so messy.
Like the fake cheese, the squirted cheese.
Oh, yeah.
I'm okay with that.
That's just nacho cheese, dude.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I'd rather the chili than nacho cheese.
You just got to be careful with the chili. It adds an element of danger. A little danger in your food is not bad for you. It's good for you.
The problem with the chili dog, though, is that it soaks into the bun. The bun starts to fall apart. It's just so messy.
You can't hesitate on a chili dog. You can't give it time to breathe. You got to fucking wolf that thing down before you get it all over yourself.
I had a chili dog from Wiener Schnitzel not too long ago, and I was never more aware of what a salt bomb I was eating. Because it just tasted like eating pure salt.
Nitrate
sickle. It was crazy, yeah.
You know, this is another thing that differs in the South. In the South, when you order a chili dog, a lot of times, there's no hot dog. It's just a hot dog bun filled with chili. And cheese and onions and shit on top.
That actually sounds pretty good.
No, it's good. It's like a chili sandwich.
I would eat that.
Yeah.
No, you want like a slice of hot dog.
You know what? I was craving now? I'm going to annoy you because this is going to be a Big Bang Theory reference. But I was watching an episode of Big Bang Theory where Sheldon was eating, it turns out this is his favorite dish, is spaghetti with cut up hot dog pieces in it.
Gross.
That sounds fantastic.
That's like at the
sauce?
That's like that's, real. That's yeah, like there's spaghetti the, sauce. In lieu of the meat, you've got chopped up pieces of hot dog.
What's that restaurant at the mall? The Jollibee.
Jollibee. I love the Jollibee.
No. No, Gary.
I love the Jollibee.
No, you don't.
I like the Jollibee. The Jollibee is great because it's like this Filipino place. And it's just this really weird combo because you see what seems like totally normal, like a burger, hot dog. And then the next thing on it is like some bizarre Filipino concoction that you've never heard of.
They have chicken wings too.
Yeah.
Fried chicken wings.
Yeah.
This is one of those things that I'd never experienced until I moved here was the Chinese, Mexican, French pizza place. Also sushi.
Weird
like,
fusion.
Like it's like, no, it's not fusion. It's just dudes that get menu crazy when they open a restaurant. They're like, maybe we can up sales a little bit. We start making
spaghetti
sushi.
With chopped
up. I'm not crazy about that. Right after last week's podcast, by the way, me and Norm went and got the curry fish balls that we talked about.
Guys, they were pretty good. Sounded really good.
They were good.
Only a dollar.
And only a dollar a skewer. Great value.
I like that.
25 cents a bowl.
I went to that dumpling place again the other day.
Dumpling places are good.
Pretty good.
What dumpling place is that?
I don't know. They just have dumplings. They have soup dumplings. I never had soup dumplings before.
But it's basically my appetite coming back. When I had my headache earlier, I was quite nauseated, and you know, you don't feel human again. You can't even think about eating.
Do you want to go back and do the news bits again, so you can kind of like just weigh in on each topic?
I could hear you doing the news, and there wasn't anything that I felt like I wanted to chime in on. You guys got it under control. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess that'll do it for us. We'll see you guys next week then.
I'm getting a Nike Fuel Band in.
Okay.
So I would use some more hardy. I saw Darren Gladstone.
Yeah, he had a Fuel Band. It looks kind of cool.
You can only get them at Nike Store in New York or online.
Yeah, I've looked everywhere for them.
They don't sell them.
Nike Store in New York or online.
But it also, unlike the Jawbone Up, it works the watch.
I like that. Just as a watch, it was.
Oh, that's cool. Nice.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get that in. Also, I have a cool noisemaker. Circuit bent kit coming in, and so we'll be doing that too.
Jeff and Ryan went through that whole phase about 3 years ago.
Yeah, this one looks much cooler, and okay. Ryan is jealous. So,
Okay. As long as you make Ryan jealous, everybody wins. See you guys next week. Bye.